here, and I just turned the switch on.
Oh, that sounds good.
Got it? Good. All right. The recording will miss that little bit. We'll now open the floor for comments from the public for items listed on the agenda. Are there is there anyone in the audience who would like to make a comment on any item on the agenda except for the ordinance that's for a public hearing? That we'll have a public hearing for. Come on down.
Good evening, Nick Orgadillas. I'd like to offer some comments on your consent agenda. You have an item on there that I encourage you to take out before you vote on it, and that's supporting the county's plans to sell the transfer station. Having looked into it pretty deeply, I did a lot of overs, read a lot of materials. This really smacks of the kind of situation the township found itself in dealing with the Water Supply Authority when they misrepresented what they were doing. We all know that in the end, the claims that they absolutely had to close Route 629 permanently because Homeland Security told them to do it is completely untrue. And yet they tried to play us, and they did a pretty good job of it. I think the county is doing the same thing with respect to their plan to sell the transfer station. They claim that they're losing money to the tune of $71,000. And yet if you look at their own financial report, under a new tipping rate, which they charge to dumpers, we can't call them that, they clear about $500,000. So the representations are totally untrue. They are required under the contract with Waste Management. I think Waste Management, who operates the dump, is required to provide on a quarterly basis a report of the recycling activity done at the dump.
Mm-hmm.
I opened this. They give me nothing. They're also required.
And I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. Out of curiosity, what was their reason for the denial?
They didn't have it.
Denial for the opening?
If you don't have something, you can't deliver it.
Oh, so they don't have it. That was the answer. Okay, understood.
Yep. The contract with Waste Management also says the contractor will provide to the county each year an independent certified audit of its operations within 90 days of the end of its fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
I opened the same document. Got no such thing. It gets worse. They twice hired a consulting firm that specializes in dumps to analyze the dump and help come up with justifications for selling it.
The transfer station.
Yeah. When I say dump,
yeah,
we all love it.
That's just what it looks like.
Yeah. It does.
Well, when you stop, it's actually a valid point, Mark. Mm-hmm. Waste Management has been running this thing for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting. It's dirty. It's full of litter. And the worst thing of all, it's dangerous. There's huge trucks coming in and out of there. You go down to put recycling down in the paper area. It's horrible. Anyway. They hired Sterner Consulting twice to do an assessment of the dump and to advise them. Sterner Consulting produced two reports, pretty lengthy. Here's the qualifier in boldface type. It is important to note that we have not received any financial or operating information or expense data from the current contract operators of the site, and that we did not rely on any historical information or financial data from the operators of the facility or its affiliated companies to develop our models and to arrive at our prospective value for the county-owned assets and the permit. You guys probably haven't read this stuff, but I really encourage you.
I read some of it. Yep.
To download it before you vote on this. Stern also says our opinion presumes that the property is free of environmental contamination. Please file that in the back of your head for a minute. I'll get back to that. They published a report, Hunterdon County Transfer Station Materials Recovery Facility. Several pages long. They held a public hearing in this room. None of the freeholders showed up except Jeff Kuhl, mm-hmm. who sat in the center chair and say a word the whole meeting.
I was there. Yep.
So you know they sent the peons, basically, who didn't answer our questions. So this report, we asked who produced this, who wrote this report? There's no attribution on it. Three, four, five, six page report. They refused to tell us who produced the report. The report says, this report has been prepared in accordance with and under the guidelines of the New Jersey Local Lands and Buildings Law, specifically pursuant to blah, 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 which requires the sale or lease of 20 years or more Here's more. This is all legalese. For exchange of county-owned real property or capital improvements, it requires the issuance of a report which identifies the reasons for and all the advantages and disadvantages and benefits and detriments of the proposed sale, assessing the environmental and recreational impact of that proposed sale, including but not limited to impact on endangered species and non-game species as defined and regulated under certain laws, and assessing the environmental and economic value of the real property or capital improvement to be sold, leased, or sold on its own. When you get to the end of this unattributed report, it says, under report limitations, no environmental sampling or testing of air, water, or soil was performed on this site.
And if I understand correctly, though, if they don't go through with a process to sell it, they don't have to do any environmental studies or remediation. I mean, I would think that that's probably something that is...
This probably pertains strictly to selling or leasing a property.
Right. But I guess my point is, if the county abandons their effort to sell it, there would be no chance for any environmental...
Well, I think there actually would be, because what it says is that if they...
If they
sell or lease the property.
Right.
The lease is up, or will be up at the end of this year. So they will have to go out to bid and get somebody to lease it. So imagine at that point...
The lease with the state is up, is what you're saying.
The lease with...
But I think that's a different lease. Those two different, two separate leases.
The two leases.
Right.
Phil's absolutely right. The two leases. So, again, this is a requirement, and they admit at the end of the report. I guess I could say this, too, because I would put my name on it. You go a bit further. Actually, I think I'm just going to let it go with that.
Yeah.
I would like to encourage you to either read the stuff before you take an action here, or just don't support it.
Well, I think we'll discuss it when we get to that item. We'll pull it out. I have some thoughts. I think probably best discussed when the resolution is up for discussion, some of which will address your concerns, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe, perhaps not all, but some. All right. Any other comments on items listed on the agenda accepting the ordinance? All right. Seeing none, we will move on. We'll close the public comment session. And you know what? I see a gentleman in the front row. If it pleases everyone, we'll move the Board of Health forward and do the reports right after. So we'll adjourn as the mayor and council, and we'll convene at 7:09 as the Board of Health to hear this septic system application for a waiver at Block 12, Lot 11.
Right. Okay. All right. I'm Bill Drabinka with Bayer East Engineering. So this application is for a property with a half acre of land with a lot of site constraints, and there are several waivers needed to place a new system on the property. And the property itself, we have high groundwater, 12 inches of modeling that we have to treat as our original level, limited space. There is a stream that's on-site, off-site that goes through, and an on-site well. So all that matters to about five waivers that we're seeking for this application. We do have acceptable permeability, just again, high water level. So we are elevating the system, but we're incorporating advanced treatment to treat the water and bring down the height of the system by about 30 inches. It's still a 3.5 foot mound. And because we have limited area, driveway on one side, property line to the other, we have to just put small retaining walls on both sides, holding the grading. Compared to like a traditional 6 foot mound in that case. So I don't know if you want to just go through each item one by one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the toe of the slope we've seen here before many times, it's only 3 feet, the county requires 10, but it's really, that's a county requirement as
that's
I understand it.
Have, right.
And given the circumstances, unless anyone on the board has a concern, I think that's easily waived. And then the proposed disposal bed will be only 43 feet from
correct,
the stream.
43 feet from the existing stream. The current system is about 30 feet, so
that's
we
great.
Are
right.
Increasing the length, or the distance, I should say, but still doesn't meet the 50-foot requirement by code.
Okay, and then the distance from the dwelling unit, 21 instead of 25, and the current one is?
Current one is 15 feet.
Okay, so that's an improvement also. Disposal bed only 98 feet from existing well.
Yeah, they're both existing and proposed about 98 feet.
All right, and it's only a 2 feet delta, 2 foot delta.
And we have a well, it is case of 50 feet, so you are allowed to reduce that distance down to 50 feet.
Okay. In that case. And no UV light or anything is required?
No UV light required because it had a 50 foot of casing, correct. And again, the last item is dealing with the 12 inches of the original groundwater table at 12 inches. Like to see less than 24, but that's not the case on this problem.
Not going to happen
whatsoever.
Was that way before, or it'll be that way now?
It
was that way before, or it'll be that way now?
Yeah, that's true, yes.
Any questions from the board?
No, I think they've done everything they can to under the property, and it's replacing a malfunctioning system. So.
Yeah, and it improves the current condition, I think.
All right.
In that case, may I have a motion for the waiver?
I'll move.
May I have a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilman Glazer?
Yes.
Councilman Kachanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Switlev?
Yes.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor Miller?
Yes.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Have a good night.
Yes,
we will now at 7:13 adjourn as the Board of Health and reconvene as Mayor and Council, and we'll go to reports.
Planning Board, there's really not much to report. The August 23rd meeting was canceled. Our next meeting is next Monday. I'm not sure the names at this point. The Sewerage Authority had their regular monthly meeting last Thursday. All regular matters were discussed. One thing of note was they did approve their 2022 audit. There was one recommendation about replacing their accounts receivable system, which really means probably all their financial systems. So it's something I'm going to take away and perhaps talk about administrator, see if we can do something with them. Not sure we can or should, but we'll talk about whether it's anything possible.
Mm-hmm.
Finance committee is nothing. The cannabis subcommittee, we had talked about having a working session tonight. The CRC, as a matter of policy, does not attend council meetings or do working sessions. They're happy to engage with any of us at any time. I had a nice conversation with Jesus there. I guess he was government affairs, now he's the chief of staff, so it's hard to get a hold of. So I don't have much to add. I would have liked to have an expert talking there about what we've done. I mean, certainly from my perspective, having tracked it, I mean, it's been 2 years since we opted out. The regulations are clearer and clearer, but still evolving. I mean, just last week, they made a change, if you will, to the retail side or the dispensary side, which was expected, extending it for edibles and things like that. So it's kind of expected, but it just shows that the regulations are still evolving, which actually might give me a little bit of pause because I feel better about making recommendations and talking if I really do what we're recommending into. We know a lot of it, but there's some areas that we don't know. And then, of course, you know, other areas are actually much more clear. The six classes of license kind of ranging from, I'll say, public-facing side, cultivation, which is just growing, got manufacturing, you've got distribution, which I think is pretty clear. You go down to delivery and retail, which are kind of co-linked, because if you've got a retail establishment, you can't deliver. And of course, you can always deliver in any place in the state, you can't put food delivery. So there's those various types of license, and the municipality has the ability to choose any of them, none of them, some of them. And we also have the ability, if we wanted to say, do full licenses or micro licenses, which are more restrictive. We think about there's smaller businesses for, really I'll call it local folks, there's rules around that, but essentially 10 employees or less, 2,500 square feet or less. If it's cultivation, it's prohibited. It can't be over 24 feet high. It's they also can't sell more than 1,000 pounds a month, or I think purchase 1,000 pounds a month is how it's said. So it kind of defines it as a small business or if it's a large business. You know, we do know when we started this, we wanted to see where the market evolved, was one of the things we talked about. And we've seen that already in the county to some degree. Highbridge just approved the micro dispensary on Main Street.
And that was a micro?
It's a micro.
Okay.
It's a micro. That we operated by appointment only.
Parking.
Right. Yeah, but with appointment only, I think that's how they got around
that.
There's also been a dispensary open, I don't think it's a micro, there's a regular one, down in Lambertville. And then Flemington's.
Flemington one open, right?
Flemington has a medical one that's open, and I think they've approved a recreational one, but I don't know all the details. I just saw about a week or so ago that they've been sued because of the selection process. Because, you know, obviously, because no good deed goes unpunished, towns that opt in, know, then you get into the hairy details of, well, you've opted in. Now, what's your framework around opting in? Like, how do you select the licensee? So, and that's, and of course, I make all the zoning decisions. Mm-hmm. Within the township's purview is where would we want it? What would the hours be? The CRC does control some things, like the signage. You only have the name of the company, so they don't have, you know, big, you know, wavy dolls and stuff like that. But then the township has to build its regulatory around it. So it's kind of a lot of work if we want to go there and get there. The path of the picture is much clearer than it was 2 years ago, I would tell you. Is it clear enough for us to say we want to do something? Is it clear enough for us to say that we don't want to do something? Like, we want to say, you know, dispensaries, there's only one in High Bridge, we don't feel the need for accessibility, but we might be open to cultivation. Cultivation can occur indoors or outdoors. Outdoors actually requires, if I remember it, a specific ordinance language from the township. So indoors is sort of, you say cultivation, it's indoors, but if you want outdoors, you gotta say, and outdoors is permitted. They're still working through that. I was on a call or a webinar where they talked about there's one licensee, I'm not sure what county, trying to do the outdoors. So it's just sort of the open discussion. Do you want to keep going on this journey and talk about it, kind of put it on hold until we know more? Kind of look for guidance from council on this.
First, thank you. That was great, that report.
Oh, there's a lot more.
I know.
I like people are short.
Yeah. But I mean, how are we ever going to find out what the public would feel about it? That's why the working session would have been great.
I agree. And maybe that's what we should say the working session for, just to solicit feedback from the public. If not, now our original goal was to have the CRC come in and talk about municipalities. We know that about 70% of municipalities in the state have opted out.
Yeah.
I would have loved for them to speak why they think that is.
Yeah.
But also why they think that 30% opted in. We know in the county, at least three boroughs have opted in, mm-hmm. High Bridge and others.
Yeah.
Maybe a few others have.
Yeah.
I don't think so. That might be a logical next step, too, right? That's a fair point.
That's the only thing I would say, because right. We know how the votes were.
Yeah, we
haven't voted.
Yeah. Right. 53% of the people registered voted the township at the time.
Yeah.
Which is a different vote, I think, though, too.
Was, yeah,
I think there were different considerations
yeah,
based on level of criminality and how long people were going to jail for. And
I mean, there is a view, because just last week the CRC started granting, they said they'll start granting licenses for delivery. And manufacturing and one of those things, just opened up three of the types. The view of one of the lawyers who specialize in the field is, oh, well, maybe once towns realize they can deliver in their township, they really opt in, because I don't want it to be important to us, but you can't ignore the fact there's revenue opportunities. So a township can do a 2% tax or 1% in certain categories. Some towns are getting a lot of money from that. Reddington has that growth facility.
Oh, that's huge.
It's huge. The revenue from it is pretty huge, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And so are the issues with the neighbors and the...
Apparently, they've controlled those better. And the CRC, which, of course, did their regulations afterwards, has what they tell me are very stringent regulations governing what they call odor-causing businesses, I think, is the euphemism that they used.
At
our level,
do we want to put something on the books or do we want to do like a survey?
How do you do a survey though? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard enough for me to even get my hiking stuff out to the public. Something important.
I'm still overall.
I agree. Surveys are tough.
Yeah.
You could say the same.
Who fills them in?
Show up. Don't show up.
I'm still leery of it, especially dispensaries. That, mm-hmm. Those make me uneasy.
Mm-hmm. How about cultivation?
That's a trickier one, especially if it's already legal in the rest of the state.
And in some parts of the state, people have to opt in for cultivation.
No, I meant the dispensing of it. It's, right. It's like people can consume it in the state, whether I want them to or not.
It could be delivered in the township, yeah. You know, once these licenses are granted, for sure. We can't prohibit that. There's other areas that, you know, the manufacturing side is essentially a manufacturing operation. It's going to just look like a building where they take in the products, they're going to lick the edibles or the, you know, or package the product or what have you. So there's just different flavors of this, if you will, we can look to.
And I'd be interested what the police think of it.
I certainly want Tom DeRosa to ask about it.
So, Bill, if I heard you correctly, I'm sorry, Councilman Villegas, if I heard you correctly, we're not allowed to do a public we have to do something under the guidelines of the CRC?
No, we are allowed to. The intent we had tonight was we want the CRC to come, and since they were unable to, is that not to do what we planned for tonight. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of talking about what would we want to do in lieu of that.
Because they don't do public presentations.
Well, so there's no really a purpose to do a work session unless someone's interested. Do you know what I mean? And you're saying there's someone interested.
Oh, there's someone who's interested in micro licensing
right.
Township, for sure.
You also have to keep in mind that all these places are going up. A business owner might necessarily, well, why am I going to go to Clinton Township? You've got Highbridge, you've got Lambertville, is that?
Lambertville, Highbridge.
You know.
Tommington.
So, I mean, I personally, this is just me speaking, I don't think it's necessary to have a work session unless we have a serious person come up and propose something.
It's a two-edged sword because I do not want someone to propose something and give away their business model unless they have a chance of success from us. Because there are three, so it's a bit of a chicken and egg conversation. Yeah. So we've got to be fair to anyone who wants to do it.
True.
And other towns, frankly, this is, I think, part of the lawsuit complaint, if I understood the pleadings properly, was the allegation is that the process wasn't fair. They kind of said yes, and they said no, then they said yes to someone else, or something like that. So I think we need to be a little bit cautious how we engage here, because we, not that we have a process, we can't violate a process we don't have, but.
What do you think?
What I had to say.
Yeah, I would say see when the CRC is available for us.
The CRC will come.
They won't do it public at all.
They will not do that. They'll meet or talk with any individual municipal affiliate. They'll talk to small groups, but they won't do
a public working session. Yeah. So, and they're the watchdogs of this, and they won't.
They have webinars. They do a lot of stuff, but that's not something the government affairs folks would do. I didn't get into the policy reasons as to why.
I hear more from folks who are opposed to it in the community generally than I do those who are clamoring for it. I don't know. I just heard this weekend from some.
I would say, I used to hear folks more opposed to it, but 2 years in, I see more people shrugging, saying, it's coming to Highbridge.
Yeah.
You know, and then most people, it's funny enough, I would say, and that's really in the context of dispensaries. Most of the doctors never thought about the back end of the supply chain, like cultivation or manufacturing or distribution. And when you mentioned, well, delivery's going to come, they're like, oh, they can deliver it. I said, well, eventually, yeah. They go, oh, I didn't realize that.
How are they going to do that?
I think they're still working those. Well, they must have the regulations that can accept licenses.
It's going to be like Amazon for marijuana.
I mean, can I even get wine shipped to my house? I guess.
Yeah.
Not in New Jersey.
Well, it depends.
No.
Yeah. That's right, not New Jersey. From out of state. What about in state?
There's nothing wrong.
I mean, could we narrow the conversation? Is there a lack of comfort with dispensaries to say, but we could explore kind of other types of licenses, like this cultivation, a little more in characteristic with the rural nature of the township, or what have you? Or do we want to not engage with anyone? Or
I think we should be open to everything. We should be open to listen, at least.
There's no doubt our dialogue has been open. You know,
the
subcommittee that the mayor appointed.
Right. That was some people.
Yeah,
and I get phone calls from people. I talked to several people on the phone.
So it's not like we've closed it. We've met with people. And only one group has been
very
proactive and
very much so.
Persistent with meeting with us.
Right.
So 100%. I've been educated a lot, knowing from listening to those interested, as well as the emails that Bill sends and the readings I've done. So. I'm still learning, too, about it.
I mean, I don't speak for the interested party, but I'm sure he would maybe come in and give us some sort of education, but we have to accept that that's from an interested party and not from the CRC or anyone. We'd have to validate and all of that. But if that's an educational session we'd like, that could occur, I would think.
It does not tip, like you said, for his...
That would be the worry I would have, but that's not my decision.
Yeah, that's up to him. I mean, he's got another risk.
Exactly. Why don't we start that?
Yeah.
I'd be interested in the party asking if they want to present to us. If they say no, let's go back to where we are now.
Well, I'm going to say maybe something could happen later tonight in public comments there.
No. We would still, I think, to really fully consider it.
Right, but something
you need to have it well advertised.
Yeah, then we could tee up something and then decide the next step, perhaps. That works. Sorry, that's a long one.
No, we needed to have a discussion.
I'll be short. Hunter and Games, 2.5 weeks ago, we came in third place again. I'm happy with our performance. We had 30 participants slash athletes. No one on our team got hurt, which is good. Our mayor did Jenga again.
I didn't do as well as I did last year.
Well, you had a different teammate. You didn't have dexterity of the dentist on your team.
Yeah, but I was the one who screwed it up.
We did come in first place in basketball, relay race, and cornhole. So basketball and relay race are two hard ones to win. So I'll take that as a victory. And there's a little talk of the hosting of it being at Bunk Park next year with Clinton Township and Clinton Town as the hosts. I don't understand why Clinton Town would be part of that, because we have a guitar field. And probably the only reason is because they don't have a field. And the only way they're going to host is if they piggyback on us.
Correct.
I thought they were more concerned about the parking.
At Bunk Park?
No.
At their side.
Oh, at town. Yeah. Where were the,
that we have more.
They don't have a facility to have it. They have Hunts Mill, but it's just grass.
Yeah.
There's no basketball. There's no backstops. But that's a discussion that hasn't been had yet, so I'm a little bit premature. There's a meeting on September 26th, per my request, to have it early this year, so we can get ahead of ourselves. And so Union Township came in first. Tewksbury, new participant, came in second, and we came in third. Thank you.
It's consistency.
Thank you, and the report. Yes. Thank you for doing
thank
your
for
job.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Start recruiting now.
I did. I've recruited my recruiting team.
All right. Councilwoman Switlik.
Yes. Environmental Commission, we met Thursday, September 7th. It's funny that we got that correspondence from Reddington because we discussed bamboo literally 2 days before we got that. We have a homeowners association, so it's sort of like a squabble. Somebody originally planted bamboo, and they wanted to know what their rights were as far as it going on their property. And it's like a common area, so and like reluctant to get involved in a homeowners association squabble, but the truth of the matter is there's really nothing we can enforce anyway.
So,
exactly. So when Reddington did that, I didn't read it in its entirety, but I definitely think it's something we need to consider. I'm up for it. Bamboo is extremely invasive. We just supported a bill in regards to selling invasives to our area, and bamboo wasn't on it, which is just mind-boggling to me, because that's like the...
Unless it's covered somewhere else by some other statute, I don't know.
Remember we supported that?
Oh, yeah, because the state doesn't have it. The state had it,
right.
Then these guys would use the state statute.
Right. So, I would definitely consider that. So we discussed it in EC, so maybe we can talk about that soon. We discussed the clearing at the back of Mountain Hotel. I talked to you, I think, about it. They are clearing what the owner says is like a hunting path, but they just took machinery and made a big path. I have pictures I can show you. My concern is that they went right into a C1 stream where Windy Acres is right there. The C1 stream that does have the wood turtle we just saw in the spring just took his vehicle and just cleared everything. So
the stream is entirely on their property. So
it's their property.
Oh, but the stream that comes
and if you look
Windy
at the property
Acres.
Line, like...
The one side is the stream is Windy Acres, one side is their property.
It's, yeah, some okay. Some parts that's of the stream is all on their property, sometimes yeah. It's on ours, sometimes it's in the middle, but it's very concerning. So we discussed at length, and, you know, I think the DEP is notified, so we'll see what happens. I mean, to be frank, all I want them to do is fix. I mean, at least to where the proper setbacks are. Reforestation, something. So, again, I have pictures of it and discussed that at length. And we discussed the transfer station. Our letter the EC sent, I think that we copied all of you guys on it.
Mm-hmm.
We want the environmental report that I thought we were going to get. We are lacking what Mr. Coccodillo said. We're wondering why there isn't an author that offers their credentials. And also this one section, we want a copy of the ISRA preliminary assessment report, which is Industrial Site Recovery Act. Owner of facilities with specific industrial classifications are to investigate and remediate prior to property transfers when the business ceases operations or is sold. Mm-hmm. And my question is, are they going to address at least, you know, the EC? Are we going to get an answer? Their deadline is September 25th.
That's the deadline for comments.
For comments. Yeah. So, I mean, this resolution to me.
Let's talk about the resolution
okay.
at the resolution.
So I think everyone's comments should be heard by the 25th and addressed, especially the EC, because we took the time to investigate yep. and send the letter. Preparing for Community Day. I'm hoping to have that honey.
You're supposed to bring it tonight.
She didn't get it to me. I didn't realize the beekeeper is an hour away, so I'm going to get it for Community Day. Farmers with the herbicides they're using. Now, this is more of an open space thing because we do the contracts for the farmers, but we're seeing the herbicides being applied, and the residents don't know about it. And I did bring this up to the open space. They're fine with it. We have some complaints from the community. What we really would like, and what I'm going to try to put in the contract, so when we start doing that, to put a sticker, something on the kiosk saying we're spraying, anything. It doesn't have to be in detail, just some type of warning, because a lot of these herbicides are getting into the trails, and these people are walking their dogs.
And who is applying the herbicide?
The farmers.
When is
And in our contracts, by the way,
we allow it.
They are required to tell the township exactly what they're applying, mm-hmm. the amount. We did the open space, yep. did that. So,
yeah.
A public notice, yeah. you know.
I mean, they should. I think we discussed this when I had a resident complaint. I think I forwarded it.
That's actually my volunteer over at Happy's Preserve.
Yeah, that incident was definitely, I think, seeding, the aerial seeding.
But in the spring, he did show me yeah. some clover that was shriveled up and brown. And I get it. I think mm-hmm. it would be nice. I don't know if we should put it on the farm.
Is there any power lines over there?
In Hackett's?
Because the power
yes, power lines,
the
yes.
power company applies an herbicide underneath the wires.
Oh, no, right away, sure.
Yes, no, this is not the section
okay.
of your yeah,
just
definitely.
Throwing it out there.
And since you brought that up, does the JCP&L, when they start spraying like that, which I know is their easement,
they put a door knocker on.
Do they look at like the Highlands map and see if there's wetlands or anything that they're spraying?
I couldn't tell you.
Who can I ask? Do you know? Because I want to know.
I can ask. Yeah, I can ask Amy.
Amy Oberman.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, they put a public notice in the paper, but it's.
I know, but are you looking to see if it's wetlands or?
It's a fair question.
I mean, you know, you can cut it down. Obviously, that's their right. But when you're applying herbicides on stuff. I saw a social media thing in Reddington, and they were complaining about that as well. So I saw some at Windy Acres. I looked, and there weren't wetlands, luckily, but it's like, are they even looking? Let's see. Unfortunately, Mike Lennick is not going to be on the Environmental Commission anymore. He is moving, and I just want to note that he was a wonderful volunteer. Anytime we had events, community days, his wife and him were there. So he'll be sorely missed. Green Team met Monday, September 11th. What we are going to do is do a cleanup at the train station. And they told us that we're not allowed to pick up litter unless it's during work hours, Monday through Friday. So they had a virtual call in its place. Members are looking at the categories they'd like to work on for silver certification. We are sharing the EC tent at Community Day, and we okayed the proofs for the pollinator garden, the grant over that we got the Green Team for the pollinator garden at North Hunterdon. We got the proofs, and we approved the sign, so that should be coming soon to be installed at North Hunterdon. Open space, last meeting was in July. Our next meeting is September 28th. The hunting program started. We had one doe at Kramer's Creek, one Braze Hill, and one at Prospect East.
Started when?
Last week.
Last week?
Yeah.
And so that's three? It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see. Mike is like ready to go. We're going to get it. We're going to get it.
And then that's just a reminder, Ms. Cecil, that we have to, in the not too distant future, revisit some of those processes.
Yes.
The ordinance. Yeah.
And the only thing else without open space is we have a lot of seats that are coming up to expire, and we're going to have to look to see who wants to come back.
If you could ask the folks who were there.
I know Mike did our last meeting, but that was in July, so I'll do a reminder.
Yep. And let me know what's opening and what isn't.
Yeah.
I think all are full, except for environmental's got the two now.
Right, right. And the only other thing is my educational outreach programs. Sunday, September 23rd, Windy Acres Nature Walk. October 21st, Birding for Beginners. I'll be out of town. Mario's going to cover me on that. November 18th, Shelter Building at Echo Hill. Looks really cool. And December 9th, the Evergreen Walk and Swag Craft at the Arboretum, which we did last year. People really liked it. Sorry I was so long.
Good, done.
I'm done now. So.
All right. Council President Strauss.
Thank you, Mayor. For Clinton Township Board of Education, as most people have seen, school is back in session, so please be aware of buses and bus stops and bus. People have their red lights on and people going through the red lights. It seems to be a habitual problem. Back to school nights are this week, including tonight at Round Valley School. Historical Preservation Commission met last Wednesday the 6th at 7 p.m. Since being off for the summer, they had a rather large agenda of items.
Yeah.
But I was happy to see that the preservation of the structure at number 2 Springhouse Road is or Springhouse Court, rather, is moving forward.
It seems like it will be potentially used as a residence, which is nice because it sat vacant for a number of years. So hopefully that moves ahead, and I know we've cleared up some issues. And
they've identified the building, right, at the entrance to the property as the concern, right?
Yeah, I mean, when that was approved, the developer could either build a new home on the lot and use that existing structure as an accessory building, not to be inhabited. However, as a standalone, it can be used as a residence. So as long as they don't build another house, it's good.
And then next meeting is Wednesday, October 4th at 7 p.m. Public safety a little longer. Speaking with Chief DeRosa, he did send a report tonight, which I'll read on. They've been busy. Besides the routine calls, numerous traffic complaints and enforcements around the township, specifically David Post Road, which they were able to get a report back to us on.
Yep. It seems like that is getting better.
Yes. River Road as well. Chief DeRosa wanted to mention that there's been an increase in vehicle burglaries, so reminding residents to lock your vehicles. This has been in the target area of the developments off of Red Schoolhouse Road down by Blunt Park. And then they most recently had a smash and grab at the U.S. Fuel on the 31 by Halstead Street. And as Lindsay and I were discussing this evening, it's nice, Administrator, to see the renovations being done downstairs, the paint.
Mm, and very nice.
I thought I was in the wrong building for a month.
Yeah. Wait till this room's done.
Yeah. So as for fire, we had a meeting back on August 9th. There's been some follow-up discussions to some of those topics. And I've seen that the work orders have been addressed at both stations.
I think most of them are all done, or are they all done?
That's a separate list. So I usually try to check periodically with the chief and see what's been checked off. So,
but I think it's moving forward.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
He's making progress.
Yeah. Thank you. I did email Lindsay tonight, South Branch Emergency Squad's report, which I got late today. And so that look for that in your email. And I did not receive a report from OEM or CERT. And just on the miscellaneous, I don't know if the mayor was going to mention it, but him and I attended the ribbon cutting at the Abad.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Sunday for the new C team.
The new C team lounge,
was well attended.
Yep.
So, and that's it.
Very Thank good. You. I'll start with the good and easy stuff. Petticoat Lane, the reconstruction ended up not needing a reconstruction, so that is going to save us some money. We did add the pullouts for queuing for the transfer station, so that'll be a benefit, I think, to everybody who uses it. We did not, although we considered adding a turn lane because that would have required us to foot the bill for the entire reconfiguration of the traffic lights and intersection. That would have added considerable cost. So that portion is done, and I believe in the next 30 days the milling and paving of the balance of Petticoat from East Main up to Haytown, also Valley Crest and Allerton from 31 up to Blue Cliff. Those should all be milled and paved, so that'll be good. I believe it is the whole length of Valley Crest. Yep. Yep. So that's moving along.
Well, not the whole length, it goes to Blue Cliff.
Valley Crest is a different road than Allerton.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Valley Crest should be the whole length from
right here
all the way up to the top.
Okay, yeah.
And then not that piece of Allerton down, but from Blue Cliff down to 31. Yep.
And they fill a lot of potholes and got a lot of patches. They've been busy this summer. Put our blue line back when they're done, too.
We'll see. Hopefully, yeah. Or somebody will. Maybe at a right, at a better length, because I think it was kind of, it exceeded the length of the... Yeah, it was a little odd. It may not need to be, depending on where they put it. Some of that may be state. I'd like to, right now, appoint Robert Parkany? To the three-year term that just was vacated, that expires at the end of 2024. He's currently an alternate on the Environmental Commission, so we'll appoint him to a full member to that vacated seat. And Ms. Heller, I will, if you can't find it, there is a table, an Excel sheet with all the different seats, who's held them in the past, who currently holds them, their expiration dates. So I have a copy. I can get it to you, but see if you can't find it. To that point on personnel, Lindsay's been doing a great job as clerk. Thank you for getting the minutes out and with our edits updated today. That's fantastic. We are advertising for her position as well as another position downstairs. We had some turnover in public works, some by choice, and I think we're filling a couple spots. It'll be good. I want to thank Denise Filardo for her many years with the township. She's taken a job at Bernardsville, so we're also advertising for that position as well. For many years, she was with the Recreation Department and then transitioned to the Planning Board. So thank her for all of that. Recreation met August 21st, which was just after our last meeting. They're looking to do, and thank you, Mr. Close, for attending that meeting. I think that went a long way with the Recreation Committee. They're looking to add a water bottle refill station at the bathrooms at Bunt. It's very nice to see the bathrooms at Bunt open now. They've been staying pretty clean and now available to the public, also saving us some money on porta-johns that used to be there. So I'm very happy and proud that that's done. They're also looking at a food truck festival in November. Turnout for July wasn't that good, so they're hoping for better turnout in November.
It was like 100 degrees that day.
Yeah, it was a bad day. That's what we thought. That is indeed what we thought. There will be a pickleball tournament coming up, and it will coincide with Community Day. Good to see folks in the audience. Community Day will be September 30th. So Saturday, September 30th, that'll be Community Day. Looking forward to a good event. It is postponed from the event we were supposed to have its usual time at the end of April.
The same times, or they modify the times?
They're going to modify the times. I don't recall exactly what they are. I think it's going to end at 6, so I think they moved it up. I think instead of 2 to 7, I think it's going to be 1 to 6.
Gotcha.
This way, with the shorter daytime.
Right. And the pickleball's at 9, I think, in the morning. Yeah.
Could be. They're doing pretty well with pickleball classes. That's all going well. We have a nice partnership with Courtside Racket. They run a great program. It benefits us. Every time I drive by those courts, the pickleball courts, the tennis courts, I saw people playing tennis, which is nice to see, and then the basketball court. So all very good stuff. Lots of talk about playgrounds, looking at different options for the new playground we're going to put over across from the high school at that lot, actually probably across the street from here. And also have some ideas for some very low cost, mostly labor improvements to Bunt Park's playground. And last but not least, summer rec camp. Almost 300 people signed up for that this past summer, when all was told. But given given the rising costs, especially for labor because of increased minimum wage, I think we will be looking to potentially increase the fees for next year slightly. Last two items. If it works for everybody, there's a property on Route 31 at the, I believe it's the south corner of the intersection with Molasses Hill. It is incredibly encumbered by wetlands to the point where it is essentially unbuildable. Not sure exactly what that property pays in taxes. I don't believe it to be very much. The owner offered to sell it to us for open space. I didn't think we would have an interest in it, given that it's really not very useful. The owner then offered to donate it to the township.
That sounds better. I think,
given the circumstances and the likelihood that it is really kind of a useless parcel and how these things tend to go and all the costs that we incur on that route, we may wish to consider accepting such a donation. So if that is amenable to everybody, we can instruct the administrator and the attorney to draft up whatever documents are going to be required for that.
Yeah, if we could just get a letter from him.
I have an email. Is that sufficient, or you need a letter?
Probably sufficient. A letter would be preferable.
I'll get a letter.
That would be better.
I'll get a letter.
Yeah, and then we can put together one of those.
How big is it?
I couldn't tell you, but when you look at it on the map, it's not good.
Probably no maintenance costs, is my guess.
Well, we're preserving property. There's wetlands there.
I had suggested that they approach the Highlands. The Highlands had no interest and no available funds, so I think rather than...
So what I'm thinking is 4.59.
And the stream runs pretty much dead through the center of it. Pretty much toast. All right, and then the big item, and I'm glad there's an audience here because I would encourage as many people to attend our next council meeting as possible. I intend to schedule that meeting for CTMS. The space is available. I'm just trying to get audio. As folks may be aware, Exxon had in interest in developing their parcel last year for a very large amount of warehousing. They do have certain rights and ability to develop the developable land on their parcel. They've got about 800 acres, probably using a little over 100. In my estimation, they've got plus or minus 100 acres to work with to develop something.
How many?
About 100,
okay.
Which is sizable. They do have their own on-site sewer and water. There are various conversations going on, but they'd like to present some options, potential options for it, some of which would be permitted, just to kind of get feedback from the community as to what our preferences would be, how we feel about it. I'm sure they would show at a very high level what things might look like. I'd remind everybody that right now warehousing is not a permitted use. I don't expect that it would be.
All that is going to be permitted use. Anything they come to us with will automatically be.
They will definitely present things that will be permitted.
Okay.
Whether that's all they present, I don't know. But I would think that they'll. Well, I know for a fact because I told them not to bother if they didn't have anything.
Okay.
That was just.
That's good.
And really feasible, right? If they come and say, well, here's thousands of square feet of office space, good luck. Nobody's going to buy office space. But if you take a look at it, and I'll try to have this all at the beginning of that meeting, their overlay zone on top of what they're already zoned for does permit quite a bit of different development. So again, this is really just a listening session for them to help them determine next steps. I do have a statement that I'll post on social media so that it gets out, so hopefully folks attend.
Is that the 27th?
Okay. That'll be the 27th at 7 o'clock.
Council moves to put township bills on the 27th.
Yes. Right? Yeah. And we'll have regular items beforehand, nothing related to Exxon. Right.
CTMS
normal meeting.
Are they going to at least provide to us some idea? Because if they present something to us, I mean, we would be able to, like, look at it, research it a little bit, and know what kind of questions we could ask. Like, can we...
Well, I don't know what you would research, what it's used.
No, I mean, yeah. The Highlands maps and things like that.
Well, yes, I think we can do that. And I think the Highlands maps are all accessible online. We could
they are, but I mean, if they're proposing a certain section to do what, there's so many layers on those maps. You can just fiddle around and look.
Yeah, I'll make sure that if they're gonna, I'm gonna ask them to show things. So if they're gonna show things, I'll make sure that it delineates.
Yeah, I want all the Highland stuff available.
Yep. And think of some good questions, because.
But it's like hard to ask good questions if we don't.
Well, I mean, what I'll do is I'll circulate a memo with what the uses allowed are, and
so we can see
correct.
What they're allowed.
Yep, we'll post that.
Councilman Kachanowski, you have a question? I'm sorry.
It's in the auditorium or the lunchroom?
Auditorium. Yeah, we can do the auditorium. So.
Same time, 7.
Same time, 7 o'clock. Yep. All right, and I think that's all that I had. At this point, we will, well, Mr. Close, did I miss anything? Is there anything you'd like to add?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
I think you covered it all, man.
We'll now move back to our regularly scheduled program ordinances. Second reading, public hearing. This is a public hearing for ordinance number 1189-2023, an ordinance of the Township of Clinton in Hunterdon County, New Jersey, amending the development regulations applicable to the AH9 Affordable Housing Zoning District located on Route 31 North. In order to facilitate the construction of a 100% affordable housing project in said district. Again, for benefit of the folks in the audience, this is an existing zone. If left alone, it would be constructed with about 146 units, of which 84 would be affordable. This will change that mix. It'll be 96 affordable units, but that's it. No additional units. So the total scale comes down. Setbacks change to make it more
compact.
They're more favorable to the township, I think. It pushes it further away from the stream. It pushes it further away from neighboring lots and the highway. And again, this is to satisfy the court-mandated fair share affordable housing requirements that we have. Are there any questions, comments from the council before we move on?
We'll make one comment just for the record. The planning board did review this ordinance at its August 4th meeting, and it was found unanimously to be consistent with the master plan.
Very
good. So the review has occurred, and occurred within the 35-day period, although we're beyond that now.
And this project is, because of its change being funded by the HMFA, so we're trying to get this moving so that it doesn't expand unnecessarily. So with that, I will open the public hearing. Are there any members of the public who'd like to come up and ask questions, make comments? I see somebody. Come on down. Well, I just ask you to come to the microphone, just state your name, the township in which you live, and that is all. Please don't provide your address.
Did you point to someone else, or would you like?
Well, I think you were interested in coming up. I thought I saw you raise your hand.
Okay. I have several issues. Now, first of all, I'm Jack Brennan from Union Township.
Okay.
Called the Reservoir. Who do I address these issues to?
You can raise them here, and we can try to, if it's us, we'll tell you. If it's...
Okay. Number one, the maximum impervious coverage is roughly 55% of the entire tract. Am I correct on that issue?
In the ordinance, right? Is it? I have to look.
I have it here. It says 55%.
Could be.
Okay. It's over 50%, right. What plans do you have on retaining the stormwater from this impervious?
So this
because you do abut the south branch of the Raritan River?
And those are excellent questions. That's, I don't know if the ordinance specifically addresses stormwater. I don't think it does.
You do have separate, you have a whole separate set of...
Because it's in the code, so that...
Stormwater, who are the ones we just passed?
That would be an issue to come to the planning board on when the application comes before the planning board for, I would imagine, amended preliminary and final approvals. A lot of the stormwater management regulations, they're in our code already, so separate from the zoning ordinance. Those would apply, and as would any state regulations that were, I believe, in effect at the time of the original application, because they've already got preliminary approval on this from the planning board.
And I would say, having been at the hearing for preliminary approval, it's pretty extensive stormwater management plan for it.
Yeah.
And also, if we're reducing, I mean, the last plans, we're reducing the amount we're actually going to be farther away from the water.
Correct. Well, no, well, the stormwater, it'll be less water that it would have to handle.
Right.
Yeah. Are there any plans to retain this water, or will it...
Yes.
Close?
Yes, the stormwater management...
There is mention of a basin, but it's
Yes. Yeah, and state regulations. No, I understand. Yeah, so this is an ordinance, and the ordinance sets high level parameters for how the development will be done, and then the details are really managed at the planning board and also by our code, and in many cases, as in this one, state regulations.
So that's not set yet.
It is set, but it's not set in this ordinance. This ordinance won't address that.
And it will be addressed.
It will be addressed. Correct.
The code already contains extensive regulations on stormwater management that implement state requirements. And then what the developer has to do when they go to the planning board is show the planning board in detail how they are complying with those regulations and what they will actually be doing to manage the stormwater, but they have to convince the board that everything they're doing is in compliance with the regulations.
I know, because I went through this. I was a builder before.
So then you know the process.
Yes.
So that's where it's going to be. But it wouldn't be in here, because we have a whole separate chapter on the stormwater regulations.
I never built in this county, but I have. The other counties, they were extremely strict on any stormwater.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very concerned. I would not like to see that added to the south branch of the Raritan, which will end up in the town of Benton,
yep.
Manville, Boundbrook. So we will retain the water?
Yes.
For the impervious surfaces? Do we know if it is a basin or?
I'd have to go back and, that'll be a matter for the planning board. So that'll be adjudicated, if you will.
And you're welcome to go to that meeting as well.
Yeah. Please, yeah.
Yeah.
I would note that the South Branch River is a C1 stream, so there are really stringent regulations around that.
The regulations are set at the state level, so they don't vary from county to county.
But the plan is pretty well written up already, I presume.
Well, you can see what was previously approved, but they're changing the design of their development,
correct.
Which I... will have an impact on how they design the stormwater management.
And what you have is a concept plan, and then the details will have to be presented to the planning board.
Well, this property does abut the south branch.
Yes, it does.
We all know that. Do we know how close any impervious property will be, how close it is to the south branch?
It'll be no closer than 300 feet.
That's what I was wondering.
It'll be more than that now that it's been shrunk.
I would have to pull up the plans and measure this. It's hundreds.
That used in Somerset County, that was 300 feet for many.
Yeah, so for us it is the same, especially being in the highlands. So pretty much every water body.
It's a C1 stream, so it's got to be 300 feet by law, by DEP regulation.
Right.
And we exceed that from my memory.
Right.
But we won't know until the application is made and the final plan is presented. So we don't have that information yet. We couldn't.
Right. And you also have a part of this proposal, I guess we still call it a proposal, a paved area with it's no closer than 10 foot from the property line.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we? Really, we're next to a park, we're next to Riverfield Park, So we're going to, we could possibly have a driveway or a walk, a driveway within 10 feet of.
I don't think.
Well, I can read it to you.
Oh, I understand what you're saying, but I don't believe it. Again, that's something we'll have to look to the final site plan.
10 feet from any property line.
Well, that's what the ordinance says, yes, and that's the requirement of the ordinance.
Well, but those aren't the setbacks, so that's.
Right.
That would be an access road or a parking area.
Yeah, but the access road only enters from 31. The parking areas are around the buildings.
Right.
I think the parker enters the county bus along the back.
Yes.
Along the back?
Mm-hmm. Well, anything but the front park, the front entrance, which is only 200 feet, if I presume.
Well, the setback from the back would be 300,
but
so.
This parcel is bounded by another commercial lot to the north.
Excuse me?
This parcel is bounded by another commercial lot to the north.
Park.
It's a commercial property right to the north of this parcel.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they both go relatively far back.
Right. Yes, so that's on the far side. On the
north side.
On
the north side, the parcel doesn't go far back. There's some parkland behind that. This parcel does go very far back, and the back of this parcel does go, let's say, to the northeast of it.
Yes, in fact, it abuts it.
Right.
At the river.
But remember, yeah. There's very, very steep slopes back by that river, so there will not be building back there, right. Parking back there, anything else. It's precluded by Highlands regulations, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So at the next meeting, that would be addressed then.
At a planning board, yeah, not at our next meeting. It'll be a planning board meeting. It'll be noticed in the paper. We'll post notice on the website. If you're interested, you can sign up on our website for updates, and we'll make sure that's done.
The water, that was my major concern, because I don't want to see anybody else flooded by this project.
Of course.
Yep.
And as far as you will put a sidewalk out in front.
Correct.
Where would the sidewalk go to?
I know
it's going to enter the property.
There's an existing.
I mean, people will be walking along the shoulder of the road, beyond the 200 feet?
There's an existing crosswalk at Halsted Street.
Excuse me?
There's an existing crosswalk at Halsted Street.
Well, did it abuts it?
It's pretty close.
It'll be connected to that.
It'll be connected to that, yeah. And that'll lead over to the trails by the reservoir. There's a walking path by the reservoir.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to have someone just walking into the shoulder of the road.
Right.
Yeah, that's not the plan.
Yeah. Yep.
So there will be side. Now, the property to the north, that's had an approved application that I speak to. It will have a sidewalk or a road, but it will allow people to walk up to the bottom.
Well, you'll have a sidewalk walking in, too.
Yeah.
Well, it's walking in along the highway and also north along the highway across the next parcel. It will allow people to go to the Wellness Center, which is the next property north, two properties north.
Now, being that those two properties I'm talking on Route 31 that abut this 200 feet entrance.
Mm-hmm.
They're both up for lease or sale or whatever.
I believe one is going to be developed as a St. Joe, St. Luke's, thank you.
The one larger parcel to the north between the Wellness and his property has been sold, and they've had an application approved by the Board of Adjustment to build a medical office building.
Medical office?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would be a good spot for it, yes. Mm-hmm. And the other property, which is pretty run down from
the old Sherrod's, its fate is yet to be determined.
It's all bamboo, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all the buildings there.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't walk your property because it's posted.
Yeah.
So I didn't, but I did walk the Riverfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied geology, and the water does rise quite a bit back there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's my main concern.
All right. Thank you very much. Well founded. Yep. I know there are others. I saw movement in the back. Anybody else wish to come forward? I'm going to go gentleman in the back first, then you. Well, actually, there's another gentleman in the back, but you can come first. No, you come up.
So, Mike Andrew, Clinton Township. So, I just had a couple of questions. And I do apologize because I printed out the ordinance, which has the preamble, so my page numbers won't match yours.
Okay.
But the primary concern is you know, we talk about the Highlands Act and 300 feet from the river.
Yep.
And yet there's numerous references to 20 feet or 50 feet from the back of the property. And that just doesn't seem to make sense to have a setback that's 20 feet when the Highlands Act requires 300 feet. I would think, and maybe I'm looking at it wrong, correct me if I'm wrong.
The only thing about setback is 300 in the ordinance.
Well, it is on page, in section G, it says for principal buildings it's 300 feet, but then in many other areas, so if you go to, and again, my pages don't match yours, unfortunately.
That's right.
They should be exactly the same.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised. I've not seen.
I don't know why they would not.
So if you, I'll just give you a couple of references. So if you go to 165, 155.50. Mm-hmm.
Parking, yep.
D says 20 feet from the rear property line. If you continue down to section the following, 165, 155.51, section A, B, C, F. If you go to section... I just want to make sure that the Highlands, I don't see
the,
why...
The Highlands will
I know, didn't we just modify the Highlands with that new ruling or whatever you made a couple of months ago? My concern is that if the builder's not asking to build closer to the river now and the Highlands Act prevents it right now, mm-hmm. I don't see a reason why we couldn't modify this and match what the builder's proposing, and that doesn't negatively impact anyone today, but it could help someone further down the road if that's not a secret.
One reason you don't want to do that? You're making an assumption about where a property line might eventually
I don't what do you mean where your property line might end up?
These are setbacks from property lines. The 300-foot buffer from the stream applies regardless of where a property line is located, what kind of setbacks we're establishing here. It'll override these setbacks. But we're establishing, hypothetically,
mm-hmm.
let's say the property gets divided into two lots. Now you've got different boundary lines. These setbacks will apply to those boundary lines, and those boundary lines could be, you know, speaking hypothetically, but this is why it's drafted the way it is.
You might have a 300 foot
right 600 feet away already from the.
But right in the beginning, you have 300 feet, so if they change the property line, you're going to have to build on the other side of 31.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to do is explain to you why things are drafted the way they are and why you set setbacks from property lines. The 300 foot buffer is set by state law,
mm-hmm.
that can't be changed. So it's going to apply regardless, but these are local standards that are pegged to where property lines are located. Yes, in this case, it's probably going to coincide.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothetically, it might not, and you know other things can change, so you don't want your setbacks mirroring a buffer from that's a riparian corridor. You want them established on property.
So what's the next lower threshold from C1? So say this is reevaluated and this is not a C1 stream and that changes to 100 feet.
I think if it's not a classified stream.
But I think we're in the Highlands. Everything's 300, isn't it?
That may be the case. Yeah, Joel's between us.
The HERS zone to boot. So, I mean, there's restrictions on the back of that property. But even in the Highland Center we're in, it's got some restrictions.
I would ask this question, though. If we were to modify it now, would we need to reintroduce it?
Yeah, and I would not modify on the fly.
Okay.
Not when you're talking about setbacks.
So can I at least get it in the minutes what is allowed within 300 feet?
Nothing.
Nothing. So literally if somebody goes back there with a pair of shears and cuts a vine of poison ivy, they can get in trouble for it? No, I just want to make sure. Because the population density in this town is 400 and something people per square mile, and we're not 400 people on...
A setback for somebody going back with a shear is there isn't one for anything.
But that defaults to DEP.
That's what I'm saying is that's not something currently covered in the zoning.
But what if, all right, so where does it end though? So can you cut out a tree? Can you build a path? Like what do you get?
That's all set by state regulation.
And actually, I believe it would also be covered by our other ordinances.
Right.
Which I think is the point that Councilwoman Switlick was making earlier in her report, where there is a parcel in town where an individual has essentially violated that 300 foot buffer.
Yeah.
And we're taking different actions to address it, but I would argue that it is not permitted.
So who do I get
how, what's permitted, what does that 300-foot rule mean? I mean, if we don't know exactly what it means, why couldn't we put it into our ordinance saying you can't touch that?
Well, I think it is, actually. It's in other sections of, not in this particular ordinance, but it's in
other provisions.
Right, it's other provisions of the code. And if you give me 2 seconds, I will.
And I hate to be a pain, but.
No, it's totally fine. Yep.
In our area, we're taking the brunt of the building in this township.
Bear with me.
The only other thing, Mayor, while you're looking that up, a lot of the setbacks currently exist. I mean, this is an existing zone with existing standards. What this ordinance is doing is modifying some of them. So a lot of the setbacks that you guys are asking about, I mean, doesn't take away the legitimacy of the questions, don't get me wrong, but I just wanted you to understand these aren't new things that are being created. A lot of these standards already exist, including some of the setbacks.
All right, so the applicable section of the code that I think you want to take a look at is Chapter 165-76, Stream Corridor Protection.
Can you read that one more time, sorry?
Sure, 165-76, mm-hmm. Stream Corridor Protection.
Okay. Because I guess in an ideal world, whatever is, it would be nice to double insulate, so in case that Highlands Act, because again, I'm not an expert on this, I don't do this every day. Obviously, it's a concern because I've been going to a lot of these meetings. And from my understanding, Highlands Act is voluntary.
It is. So to answer, I was just going to go there. If the township, after we all left, because none of us here would ever take the action to remove ourselves from the Highlands, but let's say 10 years from now, the governing body removed themselves from the Highlands. That stream is that river is a C1 water body. Isn't it a river? South branch of the Raritan River. And that is designated by the state, and the 300-foot buffer applies throughout the state to all C1 streams. That's a New Jersey DEP regulation, which is as good as a statute. So,
yeah, I would just hope that the township could further, again, insulate it by putting in our own ruling on that. So if those other rules change,
I think like
there's
a
lot of exceptions being made for this project, I think. And
not as many as you think.
In what sense would you say that there are a lot of exceptions?
Well, I don't. Again, I'm not an expert on this, but if I wanted to build a 100-unit, essentially parking apartment complex, I wouldn't get approved without all sorts of variants. Is that not accurate?
Depends on what zone you're in.
Yeah.
It's in the zone.
Okay, so you change the zone to make it.
This is more affordable housing opportunity.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Now, it's a little bit unique, but everyone has rights to their property development according to the zone.
So, for example, not saying that it is, but in the example of Exxon, theoretically they could.
Yeah.
Without any variances, with certain restrictions.
All right, so again, it seems to conflict with it. I guess there's no answer to it, and I'll look at that, and see what it says.
And I think you're signed up, well, you're close enough that you'll get a notice.
Yeah, and I didn't get, by the way, just, I don't want to complain too much, but it is kind of hard to change your scheduling. There's been an awful lot of meetings canceled at the last minute. I haven't been getting notifications. I postponed the vacation for one of these meetings. I didn't get the agenda for this meeting until
that's
online well after 6 o'clock.
That's part of a bit of a misunderstanding that we've had, I think, with our website folks. I think while the agendas have been sent, well, we're working on some things to improve.
Because basically I'm sitting there waiting, checking the website the night before every 15 minutes.
And
then it's like, oh, guess what? Tell your wife, guess you can't work late tonight because you got to work. And then, it doesn't, like, business doesn't work like that.
That's fair, and I apologize for that. Because standard practice is we get it out on Friday.
Okay, yeah, because that at least gives us a couple of days.
The weekend,
Okay. All right, I think that's. It's not for this meeting.
And there's a public comment at the end too. If you want to make a comment on any matter that pleases you. So at the end.
Yeah, I don't think it relates to this, but in a different way.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
We'll go with the gentleman in the back.
This is just on the ordinance, though, that we're talking about here. This is just on the ordinance. So
this is the public hearing for the affordable housing.
I was just going to comment on your report.
No, that's a different public comment. This is just the affordable, the ordinance. So, Mr. Corcadillis, we'll recognize you. I always recognize you.
I didn't come to support or object to the ordinance. I just want to get clear on what it really means. I read something, I don't know if I copied this out of the ordinance or if I copied this out of the resolution. What it says is, whereas the township's planning board granted preliminary site plan approval to Ingerman for development of inclusionary development, Ingerman obtained an award of 9% tax credit financing from New Jersey Housing Mortgage Finance Agency for the inclusionary development. But since that time, Ingerman has indicated its desire to change the inclusionary development to 100% affordable housing development. All kinds of antennas went up.
Okay.
I don't give any developer credit for being a really nice guy and reducing the size of the project. So giving up all of their market housing, which most affordable housing developers, or most developers when they're doing affordable housing as part of the project, they rely on the profits from the market housing to cover certain costs of the affordable housing. So why they would give that up and then give up the total number of units as well?
Well, as you know, it was a partially funded by the HMFA when it was a 55% affordable project.
Okay.
So the inclusionary part, it's not your standard 20% set aside before, right? Now, I believe, and I'm not going to speak for the developer, but I believe that the funding source from HMFA, if they switch to a 100% project, provided sufficient funds to offset the loss of the inclusionary market rate units.
Run that upon you one more time.
Layman's version is they can make it because of additional funding from HMFA just as profitable as it was when they had a smaller footprint.
Does removing the market units change our obligations under the agreement to provide water and sewer capacity?
No. Other than a reduction in the amount of total gallonage that they need, no.
Because in Schedule A, it talks about township selling a certain number of gallons for $35 a unit per gallon.
Correct.
Versus 65 for market units.
Mm-hmm.
Does our cost of providing this?
No, we already have the gallons.
So we don't need to buy more, you're saying?
It's correct. It's a sunk cost, yeah.
Are there any other impacts to the township financially or practically speaking?
No. However, it is my opinion that given that this is a municipally sponsored project, if we did not do this, there would be financial impact because we would probably have to come up with any differential.
In fact, that's absolutely true.
Yep. So from that perspective, I believe this is much more beneficial to us.
What has always puzzled me is why the township, going back years and again in its amendments to the Fair Share Housing Center Settlement Agreement, if anything goes wrong with any of these projects and the funds are not there, the developer can't do what they're supposed to do, so the township shall guarantee the realistic opportunity for units to be built by funding the development using municipal funds.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of our agreements at Fair Share Housing Center, for every development, says if anything goes wrong, the township eats it.
Yeah.
Has anyone calculated the potential risks there?
I believe, Ms. Cecil, that's pretty standard for...
For a municipally sponsored project.
For a municipally... And those are just the municipally sponsored project.
Yes. So
I would just point out that we've, I think, done a very good job mitigating the total impact of total units being constructed in the township by doing 100% projects, because it reduces the overall number of units being built. If, for example, say this is a 100-unit project, if we were to allow the market to build them inclusionary, we would have 500 units instead, somewhere else, shoved down our throats by the courts. Furthermore, I would also point out we've partnered with very good and successful
companies that build these sort of things. And just for a sense of how far back, if you want to put it that way, we are, the Beaverbrook Avenue, or the Beaver Avenue rather, 66 units, and the majority, I believe it's something in the order of about 60 plus of the 80, how many units at Merkin, 88, 84? Of those units, all satisfy the obligation that was required by the township to be completed by 1999. So all of those units that we have built, save a few, have been to complete units that many other towns' obligations have already been completed for decades.
Can you give me an estimate of what the township has spent just on this Ingerman project with respect to legal planning, all the amendments and changes that were made to our first-year housing agreements?
I couldn't, but I believe a large chunk of the legal and planning would come from the developer's escrow.
Certainly the planning, once we got to the stage of application, I believe a lot of these ordinance amendments, I'm assuming, are going to come out of the developer's escrow because they are being done for a very specific reason. In terms of legal and planning costs on the settlement agreement itself, I don't know, and that wouldn't be charged to a specific developer because that's accommodating a lot of different things.
What's troubling is that we wind up spending money on this stuff when the law says we don't have to.
Correct. But the alternative is you allow far greater development, which costs us in tax dollars to go to school.
The New Jersey Fair Housing Act says very clearly, while provision for the actual construction of housing by municipalities is not required, they're encouraged, but not mandated to expend their own resources to help provide low and moderate income housing. Another section that says, nothing in this law shall require a municipality to raise or expend municipal revenues in order to provide low and moderate income housing.
That presumes inclusionary development.
The Fair Share Housing Center notwithstanding, we are not obligated to spend municipal funds to build any affordable housing.
Correct.
And yet we do.
You're not obligated if you're doing it through inclusionary zoning. Once you choose to satisfy your obligation with municipally sponsored projects, then you are mandated by the state to commit to make up any funding shortfall.
And aside from soft costs for legal and otherwise that we would likely incur a large portion of for inclusionary development settlements as well, we've really gotten by quite well in terms of how much cost we've expended. I mean, this Ingerman project will not cost us.
I have never seen anywhere in New Jersey law anything to the effect that the town is obligated to spend municipal funds for any kind of development. The FHA is pretty clear.
No, this comes right out of the state that you, with municipally sponsored projects, you have to adopt a resolution committing to make up any funding shortfall on those projects.
Where in the state law is that stated?
It's, I believe, either, I think it's in COA's regulations. They're enforced. It's part of a requirement to get your...
COA doesn't exist.
I understand that, but the courts are still applying the second round rules. So
they're applying the second round rules, and there's no one saying no to them. You can't share housing center.
So you're suggesting that we disregard the court's orders?
No. What I'm suggesting is the township take affirmative action to protect itself, given what the Fair Housing Act says.
Well, I think so. Here's what happens. I mean, the township could very well refuse to make up any funding shortfall, in exchange for which the court would refuse to certify our plan and would refuse to recognize these projects as meeting our obligation, and you would not have any kind of judgment of repose. So you're absolutely correct. The township does not have to accept funding these projects. However, if it doesn't, the projects don't get approved by the court and there's no judgment of repose and you haven't met your obligation.
And the flip side is we're really not expending anything on this particular project.
Well, maybe you can tell me how much you think this is going to cost. As part of the Ingerman project, the township further agrees to propose, fund, and apply to the DOT for a signal crosswalk across Route 31 to provide a pedestrian connection from the Ingerman site along Route 31 to the intersection of Halsted Street.
Mr. Kirkadillis?
And to fund and construct a crosswalk and connections from that crosswalk both the Ingraham development and the walking path along Spruce Run Reservoir within 1 year of approval of its crosswalk with the DOT.
Have you driven 31?
What is that going to cost?
So actually,
there's already an existing signalized crosswalk.
So why is this in here?
Mayor, can I just also interject? I think these are all really good questions, but this is a public hearing on a specific ordinance,
yeah.
And I think we're starting to stray off topic, which isn't to say that the topic of the settlement agreement is irrelevant, just not in this context. And as the mayor indicated, there is an opportunity for public comment at the end of the meeting. I think that's where the discussion could take place. This hearing is just...
You could almost say the Fisher Housing Center agreement is incorporated by reference into the modifications being done here.
But I get your point, but again, we don't have to construct what's already there. And
so you're telling me there's going to be zero cost of fulfilling this part?
Nominal. It'll be nominal.
How nominal?
I couldn't tell you.
You're approving agreements like this. You couldn't tell me.
Well, again, as I said, this is not about agreement. This is about
the ordinance. Yeah.
The ordinance cannot be fulfilled as far as our applications go without referring back to the agreement.
Well, Mr. Corcadillas, the appropriate time to have made those comments was when that agreement was brought to the council for deliberation. So please continue.
I think what you're doing is adding costs that are not necessary.
In this ordinance, we're adding costs.
Give me another example. Within 45 days of an entry of order approving this third amended settlement agreement, duly noticed fairness hearing, the township shall pay Fair Share Housing Center as a donation.
Mr. Corcadillas, that's not relevant. No, Mr. Corcadillas, that's
not
relevant.
It's absolutely relevant.
That's not relevant to the ordinance.
The town is spending money on
Mr. Corcadillas.
The Fair Housing Act says we don't need to spend. And the idea of donating money to your legal opponent in a lawsuit, tax dollars. You gave them $30,000 when John Higgins was mayor. You're throwing another $15,000 at them again as a donation. Which John, I argued at the time, it's not a donation. It says it right here, it's a donation. The mindset this township has of dealing with affordable housing all stems from the intimidation of the Fair Share Housing Center, which creates the laws they go along.
So if I can succinctly summarize your position, you prefer that the township use inclusionary methods to reach court-mandated affordable housing and result in more units.
I didn't say that.
That's what I heard.
What I'm going to tell you is Clinton Township and other towns in New Jersey are perfectly free to take legal action to stop the nonsense with affordable housing.
Well, I would just
being used by developers in the Fair Share Housing Center.
I would
line their pockets by building very few affordable housing units.
I would remind you
tons of market units.
I would remind you in the community that the township did take affirmative action and joined with two separate sets of municipalities to take this argument to the Supreme Court. In fact, Mr. Drill argued before the Supreme Court, and this is where we're at. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your time.
Any other comments from the public?
Ed Kane, and it's Clinton Township.
Okay.
I live right across the river from this development.
Okay.
That's coming in. I had a few questions.
Sure.
What? Now you're going from 146 units
to 96.
To 96.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at page 4, it's talking about the units. It's talking percentage. Low.
Yeah.
Low, low.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What are the percentages on these 96 now?
This is speaking to, of the 96, how many need to be reserved for very low-income households, how many for low-income households, how many for moderate-income households.
Right. Do the percents still stay the same?
Yes, these are...
Not, they haven't changed, right?
Percentages have not.
And they're set by the state, I believe.
For the HMFA,
at least.
Yeah. Yeah, this is state regulations, and they're not changing. This is already what so exists in the
kind of standard.
Yep.
Yeah, it's 50
Yeah, it's like a lot, not, yeah. There's a minimums and maximums.
Right.
Yeah, and that's all set by state regulation.
Okay. Now, water runoff. Concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand they're going to take care of it, but you had solar panels put in.
Oh, you're talking about the neighboring track that the well, that were approved at the wellness.
Now there, you put 4,000 panels in, 400. So therein has changed to add 4,000 to put it to 4,000. Now the runoff sediment, you got those panels sitting, and that runoff goes into the river now, mm-hmm. because the panels are there. There's nothing underneath it. You've got that going on.
Mayor, can I address that?
Yeah, please go ahead.
So you can thank our state legislature. They have passed an ordinance that states that
statute.
Solar panels are not considered impervious coverage. So there is no stormwater management required in association with solar panels. I can tell you that municipalities fought this, disagreed vehemently. It was passed by the state. So not only is there no requirement, at the local level, municipalities cannot require. So okay. Yes, they can put in big field, they can put
but
in
but you changed the variance, though, to go from 400 to 4,000 to cut down 6 acres of trees.
Was that a Board of Adjustment application? I don't remember. I wasn't involved in it, so I couldn't tell you.
It was quickly slid under the table and done.
Well, there are also state-imposed standards that give solar panel installations a slightly different status, a higher status.
Well, I understand that solar could have stayed at 400, not 4,000. I mean,
I don't remember. I don't think I don't think
now it was quiet. It was very quiet.
Okay, you're the neighbor. You take more attention than I did.
But I don't. So I understand your point, but I'm not. Sure,
well, what I'm getting at is, let's make this. I look at the solar panels post review. Did a terrible job on it, just putting it out to 4,000. You got another project coming in. Hopefully, you handle this project better
mm-hmm.
and make sure that water doesn't go in.
Well, the key difference being that unlike just as the state has exempted solar panels, it has imposed very stringent requirements on these types of developments.
Then the other thing is, you've got it going 3 floors up, 45 feet.
Mm-hmm.
We sit down low.
Mm-hmm.
That's up on the hill. For example, the solar panels, I see them. So I can see them during the winter, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're putting this building up high. Right now, what was blocking that area to a degree was there was a lot of ash trees going
okay.
down to the river. A lot of them have died.
Of course.
Is there any way you can go after these guys to replace and put, you know, trees in to eventually replace these ash?
There are screening requirements in the ordinances.
Which they'll do it up top. They're not going to come down into that, down towards the river.
You know, it's an affordable housing development. So it's difficult by law to require what's called a Trisco reminder the word
deforestation
like
or
accretive cost.
Oh yeah.
Ideally cost generative requirements. So yes, you can impose landscaping requirements within reason. You can't have requirements that are so prohibitive that they basically kill the project.
Or
that's the easiest way to sum it.
No, but you can see if you can work with them to
we'll try to work with them. We take your point, but we would not want you to think we could require them.
Maybe able to partner with them too.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I've got, you've got the View 22 coming in, the Willow and
The View 22, is that the one on Old 22?
That's
right in Clinton Town.
Yeah.
So they put that in.
Yeah.
Willow's at Annandale is the one over on Beaver.
Yep.
You've got development going up south of the high school. And now you've got this development.
Yeah.
With all these developments coming in, I mean, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of families.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody watch and figure out
hey, what, how's it going to affect the school system? All these houses, mm-hmm. places coming in, I don't know what percent have kids.
Yep.
But that percentage is going to go to high school.
Yeah.
North Huntington.
Yep.
It's going to affect all the taxpayers, everybody else.
Which is, again, going back to the point I made earlier, part of the reason that I think as a as a township and a governing body, we've focused so heavily on doing 100% affordable housing, because if we met these requirements with inclusionary, we would have exponentially more units with a much larger impact on the schools.
Right. But you, you even have it going in over by Finagle's now, too, don't you?
There will be a very small, likely apartment.
Are we making 31 corridor for low-income housing?
That is, and that's going to be a very small portion low-income. That is really more to clean that corner up.
Oh, it's needed cleaning for years.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Whatever you do, your consequences affect mm-hmm. everybody else, the taxes,
yep.
crime, everything. Just keep that in mind.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other comments? All right, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. Any discussion on the part of the council?
Set my piece at prior meetings.
Yes.
I think in terms of meeting the court obligations that we have and mitigating the impact.
And this is fundamentally better than the last development.
Yeah.
It's smaller, the setbacks are better. On balance,
it's an improvement.
It's an improvement, yeah.
Yeah. All right, in that case, I'll make a motion to adopt. May I have a second?
A second.
Roll call, please.
Councilman Glaser?
Yes.
Councilman Kachanowski?
Yes.
Councilwoman Switlet?
Yes.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor
Miller? Yes. We'll now move on to resolutions, the first being a resolution number 146-2023, authorizing the purchase from BSN Sports of batting cages for the Recreation Department in an amount not to exceed $24,005. These are to replace two existing batting cages that are already, well, that had been, one is in deteriorated shape and one is gone. So is there any conversation? We've received a memo from the rec director. Comments?
I think lots of looked at that equation. I'm not an expert. I know nothing about subjects. I'm the opposite of an expert. I fail to see the deterioration in all honesty. So I'm struggling. Even though the memo Tom sent helped, I still struggle with the request, I have to admit.
Yeah, and having been the commissioner of Little League, having bought batting cages and having tried to maintain them,
mm-hmm.
I'm not happy with this number either.
And the
plan. So
the plan?
Maintaining is not taking them down every year. It's lifting them up every day so the wind doesn't run them on the ground, right, and wear them out, okay? Therefore, they're no longer batting cages. They're the nets hanging with a gap. It happens all the time. So it's the user that has to do that. Who are our users? Those are issues I have aside from the cost.
So you're concerned about having them in general?
Yeah. And decisions made on the type of batting cages we have. Flemington has fenced batting cages, no deterioration. You put them up once, they last forever.
Probably cost more.
I was going to say,
the
cost?
So you're suggesting a different type?
I'm just thinking we didn't look at everything.
We must be netting because they're taking down pretty much.
And also, this time of the year, I know there's fall ball, but if I don't feel comfortable with the work done at this point in the year, we could wait till the winter or the spring to make this decision.
Well, I wouldn't want to wait to right before season. I think you want to do it earlier. Let me ask this question. Does it make some sense to just do one right now of these?
So one would be 12,000, I guess, and I still think that's
11.
Yeah. And what, you're going to let one team track this and not the other team? Yeah, that's how it works. So you can't share the
point of fairness. Well, right now you've only got one, yeah. And it's in poor condition.
Yeah.
So what would you two
recommend?
Recommend? Would you recommend reviewing and getting something maybe?
Well, I asked for a quote, but Lindsay is going to ask very late, so I have a feeling. I could keep an open mind if I get more information, or I'm happy to bring you a vote. I just know I can't support the resolution, and that's fine. I mean, that's how governance works.
Well, I mean, if you have a recommendation, I'm open to a different.
I'd be interested, because, yeah, as I am no expert as well, but if you have more expertise, I'd be willing to hear what you have to say instead of passing this, maybe moving it and explore.
How long did these last?
Was that addressed in the memo?
I'm trying to remember.
I feel like they're
still said they're not that bad.
Well, one's gone.
I've got a bad
one. Is gone. One of the two is.
One's there. That's all around. It seemed intact-ish, but I don't know what the expectation. I've never done batting practice myself.
If we could take the conversation, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have other fields that don't have batting cages. Maybe we just don't have them.
What do you think, Mark? Hey.
I mean, obviously, I know Tom's expertise in that field. Tom Kochnowski.
And the recreation committee reviewed this thoroughly and looked at every single option.
They recommended.
They recommended.
I believe they recommended one. Okay. And the thought process was, if we're going to get one, get two, because just so that they're on the same schedule and equal.
It just seems like a lot of money.
Is there anything up at the Fram Fields in Batting?
No, there's nothing up at the. But I think they get a different.
Different what? There's baseball players up there, as opposed to, you know, it's more softball at Bunt.
There's also less visibility up at Ferrand.
What do you mean?
Just in terms of eyes on the field.
Well, I'm not here just to make it look good.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant for maintenance purposes.
So. We could. I didn't want to do this. I don't want to direct poor Tom Sylvia. That we could have him come and talk further to the memo. Yeah. That might be an option to explain. Because we're not doing a stupid paper. The right committee has looked at this. Tom has looked at it. I just don't have enough information for me to say I can support this. It just means I don't know. It doesn't mean
you have concerns still.
I think it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You can get the similar size net for your backyard for $1,000. I'm not saying it's going to be the same level.
Or but have a very center
12 building. Times.
You can talk to us about the quote and how we got it, too, I'm sure. Because it might be, again, I don't know the details of what's involved. I mean, there could be more than just nets. I'm assuming. I don't know.
Bring them.
Yeah, let's carry it then till October.
Yeah, not the 27th.
No.
Those four.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do some business at that meeting, but I think.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it's quite all right. So we'll hold that.
No, that's all right.
I didn't. All right.
You think I'd be all over it being the baseball guy?
You know? No, it is a lot of money.
I used to complain to Tom Silver about the field.
No, right.
Now on the other side.
That's funny. Commissioner, you wanted everything.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on now to Resolution 147-2023, appointing a part-time code enforcement officer. This is an amendment to Resolution Number 127-223. You want to speak to this briefly, Mr. Close?
Sure. Part-time code enforcement officer was done at the request of the Zoning and Construction Office to assist them. It's limited. It's 4 hours mm-hmm. per week.
Right.
It's just to follow up on complaints from neighbors and property owners about the condition of certain parcels as they develop. We can send someone out in the field to look at them, provide a report, speak to the folks, and hopefully get them into compliance if it's out of compliance with the ordinance, and work with them to accomplish that in a reasonable fashion.
And this amendment specifically just changes their hourly rate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So it's going from like 25 something to 26 something. So
yeah.
That's not happy to make the motion.
Thank you. May I have a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilman Glaser?
Yes.
Councilman Kochanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Switley?
Yes.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor Millett?
Yes. Next, we have a resolution requesting the approval of items of revenue and appropriation in the 2023 Township Municipal Budget for the 2023 Safe Passage event, DWI enforcement for Memorial Day and 4th of July, an annual state-funded grant to help us do enforcement actions.
It did say the money's coming from the Somerset County prosecutor.
Yes, I think it typically does.
Okay, if that's mm-hmm. correct, then I'm like, okay, I'd like to give you guys money. I'd make the motion, unless there's more discussion.
Mm-hmm. I'll second. Roll call, please.
Councilman Glazer?
Yes.
Councilman Kachanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Zlotlick?
Yes.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor Malone?
Yes. Next, we have resolution number 149-2023, resolution of the mayor and council of the township of Clinton confirming the appointment of Lindsay Heller as registrar of vital statistics for the township of Clinton. This is another of the duties that we need to ensure are being taken care of, and Ms. Heller has now all the proper qualifications for that. Congratulations on passing that exam. Any conversation, discussion?
Make the motion.
I'll second.
Roll call, please.
Councilman Glazer?
Yes.
Councilman Kachanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Zlotlick?
Yes.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor Malone?
Yes. And as we embark on resolution number 150-2023, Council President Strauss is recusing himself. It's 8:46. This is a resolution authorizing the purchase from Whitmer Public Safety Group Incorporated for turnout gear for the fire department in an amount not to exceed $33,450. We've been replacing turnout gear slowly on an annual basis. I feel like a year or two ago we were still replacing turnout gear from the 90s, which was a little antiquated. So definitely need it and want to support our volunteer fire department. Any questions? May I have a motion then?
I'll make a motion.
Second?
Second.
Right. Roll call, please.
Councilman Glazer?
Yes.
Councilman Kachanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Zlotlick?
Yes.
And Mayor Malone?
Yes. Mr. Strauss, you can come back.
Ladies,
oh, sure. All right, we're going to. We're close to the end. All right, we're moving on to the consent agenda. Just note that Councilwoman Switlick stepped out at 8:47 briefly. The items listed below are considered to be routine by the mayor and council and will be enacted by a single motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless requested by the mayor, council member, or member of the public, in which event the item will be removed from the consent agenda and voted on separately. Before I go to asking if anybody has anything to pull, I've already noted that we will pull Resolution 157-2023 for the transfer station resolution. And we're going to pull resolution number one, item 11, resolution 159-223 for the authorization of release of performance guarantees. We're going to carry that for a couple of meetings. Its form is one we've used historically, but needs a little bit of updating, I think. So it's not quite ripe. So that's pulled and
Oh,
thank you. I almost missed that. We're going to pull resolution 158-2023, item number 10 for the shared services agreement. We're going to hold that maybe to the next meeting, maybe a little longer. Yeah, I can go on the next meeting, but if it's ready and to your satisfaction and Mr. Close's and Chief DeRose's.
Yeah, it should be not an issue to do it on the
27th. Yep. So items 10 and 11 are delayed, carried. Yes, thank you very much. Are there any items other than those which anyone wishes on the council to remove from the agenda?
Item number 2, please, for those bills and vouchers.
Sure, we'll do that one first. Any other items?
Number 1, the minutes, unfortunately.
And did you see the updated ones from today?
I did, and that's I got them very late, and I wasn't able to review them thoroughly, but I don't think it captured my report correctly. So I didn't have time to work on what I would want to set to Lindsay's
book. I wanted to ensure you saw the latest.
Yeah, that's why I'm sorry. I got it late. So
nope.
Couldn't get to it.
That's fine. All right, so with most of them pulled, we will, entertain a motion in favor of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Actually, hold on one second.
So what did you discuss about the transfer station?
We've pulled items 1, 2, and 9 for discussion. 10 and 11 are going to be carried.
Okay.
Are there any other items that the public might wish us to pull from the consent agenda?
No, sorry.
Okay. Nope. So those items are polled. May I have a motion in favor of the consent agenda?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilman Glazer?
Yes.
Councilman Kuchinowski?
Yes.
Councilwoman Switla?
Yes.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor Miller?
Yes. So we will begin with the approval of the regular session meeting minutes from August the 9th. Thank you for getting them done so promptly.
I would move the table to the next meeting.
Absolutely. Nope, that's fine. Yep. So those will be tabled, but I want to note and thank you for the quick turnaround on those. Yep. Very good.
Mayor, if I can jump in.
Please.
To pile onto that. To Lindsay's credit, the mayor and I also sent her a bunch of comments and suggested changes to the minutes. What, around 3:30 maybe is when I got them to you, Lindsay?
3:25.
Yeah, and I think at 3:40 she posted the corrected minutes, So, fantastic job.
So, carried. Duly noted. Anybody object? No motions otherwise? Good. We'll move to the approval of the bills and the vouchers. Do you need to abstain from an item?
I do not. I just had questions.
Sure.
So, on the vouchers, right in the beginning, there's a few wrong amounts to the county opponent on there. So, the negatives, which is good. But what happened?
I was confused as well.
I'm not familiar with the circumstances.
I came back from vacation. That's the bills list that was generated by the CFO.
Corrections.
It looked to me like they voided some checks and reissued for proper amounts.
I would think that's more than likely what she typically does. If there's an incorrect amount, she voids it, brings it back forward on the back end.
And then the wrong amount, yep.
But all the payments, Mark, were reissued down below.
Yeah, they're typically pretty close to the right numbers right below it.
And then just a question of a payment on there. It was the Catastrophic Illness Fund assessment for the state of New Jersey, 2022.
Okay.
What is that? Sorry, I'm sorry.
It's an invoice sent to us by the state for that fund.
I've never remembered it, but okay.
I can give you what I'll do tomorrow, send you a copy of the backup for it so you can see exactly what it entails.
It's an annual thing?
I believe it is.
Is that like an SUI or something? That's.
I don't know if I'd classify it that way, but.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions other than that?
No.
All right. In that case, may I have the motion?
Yes.
May I have a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilman Glazer?
Yes.
Councilman Kuchinowski?
Yes.
Councilman Switla?
Yes.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor Millett?
Yes. All right, we'll move on to the transfer station resolution. It does have certain conditions that we're asking the county to take into account for a proposed sale. Some of them I've articulated previously, continuation of drop-off, continuation of the payment of the host fee, and also of particular note is the current condition of the facility. And it notes that the facility is in pretty awful shape, especially the recycling area has recycling piled very high, uncovered, and with debris and refuse blown around, including sometimes onto the road. I think investment is needed. I'll be quite honest, in my opinion, if the county retains it, we're going to get more of the same. That's my own opinion. But I know you had some other concerns from the Environmental Commission. And
it says resolution supporting. I'm not going to support anything until EC's at least answered. I mean, it's on EC letterhead. You can at least answer our three questions. And I also think the comments section, or the time is September
25th.
I think before we support or say anything, we might want to wait.
Well, I think you have to get it in advance. If you want to impact what they're going to do, we need to get it in before the 25th.
I really would like.
So we can change some of the wording.
And that's sort of where I am. I struggle for some reasons. Mr. Burkill has talked about also for some other reasons. I struggle with being able to support the sale. I think the county's disclosed a lot more information. I don't think it's sufficient. I don't have an opinion on the sale. I do have an opinion on the comments we made in here. And I think I would recast this as sort of suggesting conditions if they were to do a sale.
That's fair. I think that's what I intended. It may have been inartfully worded, but yeah.
So actually, because I did some amendments.
Okay.
Got some red lines I could share with people because then we can read them. But it basically says we're not saying anything about the sale. We're not supporting the sale. We're just suggesting conditions of a sale.
Fair enough.
And we think those, in my mind, what we're saying are those conditions, the same ones outlined in the draft, that those would be beneficial to the township. We want the host fee to continue.
Yep.
We want the recycling drop-off to continue. We want the bulk transfer to continue. And we want the contract to specify improvements to the property.
Yep. That's to me a big key.
I agree. And I think as conditions of sale, great. But I think taking a position supporting the sale, I can't.
Fair enough.
I don't know enough about their rationale to sell, mm-hmm. and I certainly don't know the deal they might get. So you know, if it's a dollar sale, I might have a different view than if it's a $500 million sale, clearly.
Yeah.
So that's why I might. I can distribute these. I can read them. I don't know what the right protocol is.
Trisha?
Looks to me like you got a lot.
I did some extra copies because I came prepared, like a Boy Scout.
Yeah, I mean,
but not enough for the public.
I think if we're... I mean, you don't have to literally read them, but I think you would certainly need to indicate the changes to the resolution before the council votes.
Right.
Right.
Well, read them. Do you want me to read them?
At a minimum, if you can paraphrase them and then indicate they're stated in a written resolution that you can hand out to the council, but I think for the benefit of the public, if you can at least...
Yeah, I can paraphrase it. So in the title, I would change from saying we're supporting, I would say resolution... suggesting conditions on the proposed sale of Hunter County Transfer Station.
Mm-hmm.
I would then talk about our finding. Instead of finding that the sale was good or whatever, I'd say that we find that, I got to put on my glasses because I'm all blind. We find that the county's owned solid state waste transfer station has provided benefit to the township, and such benefits could continue or an increase.
Okay. Yep.
If these conditions were met. I would slip something in saying that the host fee should be an appropriate annual host fee. I wouldn't want it set at $1.40 per
time. Well, I specifically didn't put a dollar in there.
Exactly. But I just want to be appropriate.
Yep.
I think it's host, because we do incur costs being the host community. Yep. We know of roads. We just did some roads, as a matter of fact. And then instead of saying again that we support, we just suggest the book of sale include these conditions.
Fair enough.
I tried to keep them pretty simple. I might have repeated conditions, but I didn't need to.
My overarching goal was to address some of the concerns I've heard from the community about how its current condition, quite frankly.
And I think that's important. It's the host community. I think saying the conditions we'd like to see on the record, the county mm-hmm. is important. That's why I would like a resolution. I just can't go as far as saying I support the sale.
Fair enough.
I just want to suggest conditions.
I agree with Bill. I mean, the feedback I've heard is conditions of their maintaining it as a place that
yep.
we can use and clean up.
Yeah, the cleanup has to happen.
Oh, God.
Uh-oh. Did you miss something?
No, there's an artifact from under file in here. As I needed, I was doing something.
That's why it looked so big.
I'm redlining that. I'm like, what is that?
He's redlined the red line.
I did redline the red line.
Okay. And then I can also press for an answer to some of the ECs.
They're pretty significant. I mean, you can't even tell us who.
Oh, listen. Yeah.
Credentials. I mean, it's
right.
pretty simple. Right?
Fair enough. I don't know that would have a positive or a negative impact.
They're an extension of the governing body on Environmental Commission letterhead.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, I don't know that it would have any impact on whether the sale would negatively or adversely
right.
impact.
But the Environmental Commission worked hard to...
Oh, I get it. That's why I can push to get an answer to there, is what I'm saying. I can push for that. So I'm good with Bill's edits.
Absolutely.
Anybody else?
Can you hand these out so people read the changes, or how do you want to handle that?
I'm comfortable with that. I don't want your other stuff to
Yeah.
Well, the other stuff, yeah, rather not hand out.
Yes.
It's not that either. It's a township business, but it's not relevant.
Not relevant to this.
If the council is comfortable, I don't think you need to see the exact words of putting it.
All right. Perfect.
Comfortable with how
I'll make the motion then. May I have a second?
Second.
Roll call.
Councilman Glaser?
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynowski?
Yes.
Councilwoman Switlik?
No.
Council President Strauss?
Yes.
Mayor Millett?
Yes. All right. I think that's it. Move to public comment for items not on the agenda. Come on down.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Meeker Patel. I'm here to comment on Councilman Glazer's report. I just wanted to kind of inform the council a little bit. There's a lot of misinformation that goes on regarding cannabis, you know, especially depending on which social circles you're in. First of all, cannabis is overwhelmingly popular regardless of race, age, or political affiliation. In fact, I have a study which is, it's a nationwide study, so it's not specific to New Jersey, but it's, you know, U.S. Study from the end of 2021. 31, nationally, 31% of the population approves medical use only, 60% approves recreational use, and so less than 9%, you know, don't support it at all.
What was the percentage of medical?
31 for medical only and 60 for medical and recreational. And then even if you go to the most conservative and oldest Republicans, you get 40% say medical only, 40% say recreational, 45% say medical, so 85 approve of it. And then the lowest demographic is Asians. It says 43% support recreational and 46% medical, so you still have 89% supporting it. And then, so the next point I have is just in terms of the revenue potential. It generates more taxes than liquor. In Illinois has, in 2021, had $387 million in cannabis tax revenue versus $291 million from liquor. Arizona makes three times more from cannabis than from liquor and tobacco combined. That is, and that's also something that was, their market is only like 2 years old there. So it's already, you know, making substantially more than liquor and tobacco combined. Colorado makes eight times as much tax revenue from cannabis as it does from liquor. And just, there's a study from the Institute of Taxation and Economic Policy. The 11 states that were studied at the time that were selling adult use cannabis collected $3 billion in combined taxes from cannabis versus $2.5 billion from alcohol. So it's, you know, the other point is that this is something that, you know, most people don't realize. It actually links to a safer community because it eliminates the black market. So, you know, right now, all the cannabis that's being used for the most part is black market cannabis. So you don't know what goes into it. It hasn't been tested. And also it's easier access for teenagers to get it if it's on the black market. Once it's regulated and it's, you know, you have to go through a security guard, could be an off-duty police officer, to get it with an ID, it becomes much harder to get. The black market competition goes away. And it actually, there's studies that I can cite here that in fact, teen usage has went down in Colorado and other states that have legalized recreational use. So, and it's actually substantial. Also, this is another interesting study. Insurance data has showed that insurance premiums have went down, auto insurance premiums have went down in states that have legalized recreational cannabis. And it's a study of over 5 years. You know, insurance premiums never go down, right? They always go up. But in fact, from 2014 to 2019, there's a study that insurance premiums went down about $22 a year on average in states after legalization was enacted. Could be because of reduced drunk driving, you know, possible substitution effects. And it's also important to consider that it's insurance premiums are a better indicator because these premiums are calculated by actuaries who have all sorts of statistics versus looking at actual traffic accidents that result in a casualty, because that's less than 0.5% of auto accidents result in a casualty. So the insurance data is actually pretty significant. There's actually further zip code based analysis that shows that there was a more significant reduction in the premium costs in areas directly exposed to a dispensary. So, and then the teen pot use. So, cannabis use amongst teens dropped by 35% in Colorado in 2021. Only 13% of high school students said that they had used cannabis within the past month versus in 2021 versus over 20% in 2013. There was a Healthy Kids Colorado survey that reported a decrease in the number of students who had ever tried cannabis. The percentage of high schoolers who had smoked at least once in their lives dropped from 38% in 2005 to 26% in 2021. Percentage of middle schoolers who had smoked at least once in their lives dropped from 10% in 2011 to 5% in 2021. The strict adult use regulations make it harder for young people to find it, and it also eliminates the competition, the black market, and make sure that the product that's actually in use has been tested by an approved facility by the state. So in 2013, before legalization in Colorado, 55% of kids said they knew where they could find it versus only 40% in 2021. So that study is actually corroborated by other studies that have been conducted in other states. So there's a national study that said that, you know, teen pot use in adult use states fell by 8% over the last two decades. The other thing is right now, Flemington has three dispensaries. So they and the dispensaries that they have, because they just approved the third one. The third one is going to be a recreational dispensary, and they just grandfathered it into the one of the two medical dispensaries that's already there.
There's so three up and running already in Flemington?
The two are up and running, and then the third one has just gotten approval to be recreational. The two that are open were grandfathered in from the 2018 round, which was for medical applicants only. So they were grandfathered in, and then now recreational has been approved in 2020, and so they were just allowed to have another permit, even though one of them is a multi-state operator with locations in, I think, seven or eight different states. A lot of these, you know, in New Jersey, I think around 70% of the dispensaries are actually Canadian public companies, so it's not even benefiting the state. It's not benefiting the local community. And so, again, like I was saying, there's three in Flemington. They have a population of, you know, 4,500. Raritan still hasn't approved it. They've opted out. And so really, Flemington is getting all this cannabis tax revenue that's going to, you know, from Hunterdon County, which is, you know, 130,000 people. So now we do have one in Highbridge, but, you know, opening it up, it's still pretty early. There's a lot of revenue potential and things like the batting cages and you know, the transfer station. Those things can be paid for from, you know, from revenue from the cannabis taxes.
Is the revenue higher because they're taxing it heavier than liquor, or they're selling more of it than liquor?
So the price point is higher. So I think generally when someone goes into a dispensary, the average spend is around $100. Versus if when someone goes into the liquor store, it's probably a much lower price point.
Well, you haven't been to the liquor store with me, but.
And also the percentage is higher.
The percentage. Okay, that's really where
percentage
I was
going. Percentage is higher.
Okay.
And then it's been about coming on 10 minutes, so I don't know if anybody else.
Yeah, I just got one last thing. I'm just going to talk about the micro license, because that was something that you guys had some questions about. So the micro license is basically designed to benefit the local community. It requires you to have 2,500 square feet or less than 10 employees. Every owner, employee, and officer has to be a resident for 2 years or longer of the township that it's in or an adjacent township. So you cannot even come from somewhere else like Princeton and start one here. You have to be in this township or an adjacent township. Versus the three that are in Flemington, which one of them actually was talking about how during their meeting at the presentation to the council in Flemington, how most of their employees would have a shorter commuting from Pennsylvania across the border than to where they were working in Pennsylvania, which is ridiculous. So we're actually going to be benefiting because we're going to be putting people to work in the community in our township, and we're going to be giving back to the, you know, to the township. The other thing is, so like I said, 51%. So every single employee, owner, or officer must be a New Jersey resident and have lived here for 2 years or longer. 51% of them, sorry, have to be in the adjacent township or in the township. Less than 1,000 plants, less than 1,000 pounds per month. No owner, officer, director can also be a owner in any other cannabis business. Cannot vertically integrate, have to choose one of those six subcategories. So it's pretty stringent, the requirements that are set for the micro business. It's It's designed like that to basically encourage municipalities to partner with the microbusiness because they know that it's going to help the local community.
Do you know what 1,000 pounds translates to dollars in our pocket?
I mean, there's no way you would actually ever hit that limit.
No, but
if you did, you would, it would be like, yeah, you would.
You obviously know the information.
Yeah, it would be like, I mean, 30 million a year or something like that. If you could get to 1,000 pounds,
what we get to keep.
That would be the revenue.
Oh, the revenue. Okay.
Yeah.
And
so you would get 2%.
2%. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Still. Yeah.
And then to tag on to that, my name's Tristan. I live in Clinton Township. I'm actually a registered nurse and been working in oncology for about 5 years now. I actually work at the Cancer Center in Flemington, and through that I've seen how a lot of patients actually use cannabis and how it's beneficial to patients. But through that process, my partner Sean and I with me here have been starting this business and actually also working with the recreational side, because when we look at it, patients that are using cannabis medically or recreationally, they're using it usually for like a medical purpose, like they have anxiety, depression, sleeping. And what we're trying to do is also show that it's a safe product for the community to use and that we can help make it a safe product for the community, especially because like we have stories from patients and even clients going out to these dispensaries in Flemington asking for information from the bud tenders, who are basically like the ones giving out the cannabis at the counter. And they're not medical professionals at all, but they're giving advice to these patients that isn't actually beneficial to the patients. It's harming the patient, whereas like they're telling them to take something that doesn't go well with their diagnosis, and it can sometimes cause them to get anxious, or they're giving them things that are too strong. So by having medical professionals involved, we think we can help the community see that it's a safe product and prove that it's something safe for the community to use.
So all the dispensaries don't have a qualified person to say, I had some kind of medical thing and I explained my symptoms. That person could give me an idea of what I'd like, but they would not necessarily give what I really needed.
Yeah, because not all the dispensaries, none of the medical dispensaries need a medical professional right now. There are a few in the state that have a medical professional.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not required.
Got it.
So I think a few have like a pharmacist, and that's pretty much it. So we're trying to have more medical professionals involved, so that way recreationally or medically, if someone's coming in asking for information on how to use the product, we can give them the correct information.
Thanks.
The safe information.
So to again tag on to that, what we're trying to present here
can
is
just
a
state your name.
Sean Lyon. I am the owner of Team Holistic Care. It's veteran owned. I'm the veteran. So that also puts points towards our priority of getting a microbus license with the state. That puts us ahead of everybody else. So if you were to approve us or talk with us, we go straight to the top. Also with me here and having our new partner here, Christiana, it actually gives us more points towards that system for the micro license. Disabled veteran actually puts it straight to the top priority. I am a DVOB business registered with the state to be able to apply for it on that level. But what we're trying to present here is a product that's going to be safer than any other dispensary they have around here, because you will have registered nurses guiding and coaching these patients to safe cannabis administration. And we can also steer them and make sure that they avoid any of the possible risks with cannabis. So there's a lot of information that is kind of overwhelming for these patients, and kind of our whole business plan on our level with Team Holistic Care is the patient gets the card and or non-patients, they don't know anything about it, and they're left on their own. Between the doctor and the dispensary, there's nothing there for them. Both of us being oncology nurses during COVID and before that, for about 10 years I've been a nurse, I'm no longer on the floor, but we saw the gap there, and that's what gave us this business idea to start this consulting firm coaching patients on proper cannabis use. A lot of what we do is not just coaching patients, but we're also out here advocating for the patients, trying to get more dispensaries in the areas. Instance, has anybody here ever had somebody who's gone through chemo? Or anybody that has an MS patient or Crohn's? All those patients could benefit from this. We are restricting them by not having one here. Phillipsburg, Flemington, Somerville, they have to drive. These people are sick. The other, by having us here, there's also inside of the CRC, there's something called the institutional caregiver definition. That's a nurse that can provide care for all these patients. We could pick it up for them. We could use the dispensary to be able to deliver this to the patients where they don't have to get up and go out and go to the dispensary and do it. That's another service that we could provide that these other dispensaries aren't going to have. And along with this service, we have the education that they don't have. He referenced the bud tenders. We talked to the lawyer that teaches the class at RV for them. She specifically said it is illegal for them to give medical advice. It is above their scope. You have to be a licensed nurse or a doctor. This is a list of doctors and nurses that we work with that support what we're doing. You were talking about you don't know too many people that support it. I got a whole list right here. All medical professionals that teach and educate
in Huntington County
and provide medical care to your guys' population.
Friends, community.
There's a lot of opportunity from here if we were to work together, not just on dispensary, but also possible, like you were saying, manufacturing, possible growing, depending. We do have interested backers and investors, too, so we do have the ability, if you guys were to do business with us, to start right away.
So you're actually proposing something tonight?
Well, I'm not really proposing it, but I mean...
I'm just curious. Are you just here to give us information? Because we need more information, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just curious. I mean, I know a long time ago when there was medical marijuana for cancer patients, I think in New Jersey there was two places available and they'd have to drive hours.
Mm-hmm.
That was my experience with the person that I knew who went through chemo. So it's good to see that there's a lot of options closer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we have to have one in each town, but I mean, at least I'm happy to know that people who really need it medically can get it, you know, closer.
Mm-hmm. There is an issue with the type of the product that most of the dispensaries have. Most of them, like I was saying, are multi-state operators. They only care about the bottom line, so they don't necessarily have the product that the patients need. One of the most popular things that the patients need is sativa, which is one of the two forms of cannabis. Indica actually cultivates faster, so it takes about 1 month less to produce, but it produces the same amount. So most of these multi-state operators, they only care about the bottom line. They don't care about the community. They're literally just pumping out indica. It's almost impossible to find sativa right now.
Yeah, we have like patients that are driving, like you were saying, hours around Jersey just trying to find certain products that help with their illnesses.
And also by having us with their service, we can do research and quantify this and see what works better for them. And then if we were to manufacture later on down the road, we'd be able to manufacture products specifically to their needs and be able to use it, his dispensary, to be able to distribute it to the public.
But I think like the bottom line that our business is about is we're trying to show, like, make it safe for the community. It's all about safety for us. We want the community to know that it's safe product.
We're parents. We, you know, our kids go to school in public school, so, you know, we're part of the community. So we're very sensitive to how this is done. We want to make sure it's done the right way.
We want to make sure that, obviously, you guys and the community are willing to have us.
And to add on to that, I'm Christiana Tomlinson. I'm a DMP registered nurse. I also am a nurse. And I focus a lot in research right now in my current role. So to Sean and Tristan's point, I think you don't want a dispensary just out there. I think you want something controlled. I think you want that guidance that you get from assessment all the way through that journey of getting that help that you need. If you're going to open up a recreational facility, you're letting a person walk in and kind of guide themselves to what they want to do. I think you would benefit with that education, with that nursing background or medical professional.
So, I mean, do we want to try to schedule at some point in the future?
I would love to have a work session with them. I mean, when we do have a work session, I think these would be the people that would be good to be there. Only because of their medical experience. That's just my opinion. You guys can take it on.
What qualifies us to also talk about cannabis is we both took a certificate course from Pacific College. It's an 8-credit master's level course that gives a certificate to be able to coach, educate, and assess patients. It's not just all benefits, too. We would also, if somebody had something like a certain disease or they took certain medications, we might not recommend they even do it because we understand the risk. Nobody teaches this in the dispensaries right now. Certain medications anybody here might take, there's certain metabolic pathways they go through, they're going to interact. Now, cannabis itself is considered one of the most safest meds to interact or to take with any other med. But sometimes there can be things like blood thinners, for instance. It could potentiate what a blood thinner does to you. That can be accounted for, though, if you have somebody coaching you and even maybe providing a service where we go with the patient to their doctor. There's endless services we can provide, and a lot of it is covered in the CRC, in the rules in here, these definitions, institutional caregiver. This is what we cover. It's already in the system. We just need the opportunity.
Do you think medical insurance would start recognizing you?
Okay, so the U.S. Health Department just recommended that they deschedule it from a Class 1 to Class 3, so yes, when that happens, insurance will cover it. There are insurance companies out there right now that are trying to start up to cover it, but your main ones don't cover it right now because it's a Class 1. The Health Department, the U.S. Health Department, just on the 29th, just recommended it be descheduled to Class 3. So CBD used to be Class 1, too. It is now a Class 3, and we use it in the hospital to treat seizures. They're saying that it has medical value, and by them saying they're recommending to bring it down to Class 3, that means that they're saying it has medical value. It's not a pseudoscience anymore. We understand the ECS, the endocannabinoid system. We all have it. Every animal has it. It's how our body operates. It's our equilibrium system. If I could give you a quick example of how it works, you guys have all heard of the runner's high? Has anybody ever heard of the runner's high?
Oh, I have. I used to run.
Right? So when you run for a certain period of time, your body dumps our own anandamide is what it's called. It's what THC mimics. It's what the ECS operates off of. So when you have that runner's high, that's why they call it runner's high.
It was in
sense
organs,
of well-being,
but it's
yes.
What runner's high is.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's from the ECS.
It would be great to get people that are reasonable, that are against this, to be part of this working
correct.
Session. Not because I want to kill it.
No, I understand.
I want to see you guys do your show against them who are against it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we might be on the fence or for it. Mm-hmm. I think we need people that are against it mm-hmm. because those are the voices that we're going to hear the loudest from.
Mm-hmm.
So if
sure.
we can see how you react to them, it's going to help us down the road.
And for sure. React. In general, the voices against it are going to be louder than the voices for it.
That's fine.
Councilman Tom Kaczynowski, did I say that right? So alcohol, for instance. I have a drink myself pretty much every weekend. You cannot compare cannabis to alcohol and how dangerous
it is. This isn't the working
system. No, I understand. I'm trying to throw that out there, like the differences. Like we have alcohol stores everywhere.
All right. So yeah. I think we'll consider it for some time in the future.
Yeah.
I'm not prepared. I think if we're going to have people in a work session, these might be the ones to be there.
It's
just my thought.
Get some public comment
about what they should be having in the town. Yeah.
About licensure
in
the town.
I don't think we should wait too long. I mean, they're passionate about this. This is a business, pro-business. Regardless of what it is.
Yeah, I know. We'll figure it out. I can't say when, but
right.
I'll be in touch with one, probably Mr. Glazer.
Yeah.
We've been meeting with Councilman Strauss and Glazer for at least 2 years now, just so you know.
Maybe a year and a half. A little less than that, but it's,
year and a half.
It's been a while.
Well, I remember you guys mentioning veterans.
Yeah, I think this came up in the spring, and we don't do those sorts of things over the summer.
No.
We can't help it. All right. Good.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the public on whatever?
Established, was that 1841?
Mm-hmm.
Before the 1900s, cannabis was the most prescribed thing by doctors. In the
boy. Put that on your billboard when you come to the work session.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Well, what it's worth, I agree with them. I think Clinton Township needs to get its head out of its ass and get with it. Cannabis is all over.
Well, our head's not in our ass, and we are getting with it. That's why we're talking.
To hear that. But when
that's
I hear,
why we're talking to them. And that's why we're saying the possession. Right. Thank you.
Well, when I hear someone say that even though 67% of the vote was for cannabis here, when I hear somebody say, well, that may not be what they really meant, that's head up your ass, Tom. I'm not saying.
I think it was less than 60.
About the vote.
But I think
the
vote.
And the state didn't have their ducks in
a line. I don't know how many of us even feel about it.
The state didn't have their ducks in a line.
I do think the vote was
the state didn't have their ducks in a line. I'm not going to go with a half-baked pie. Okay? And that's what it was. And it's getting better. And that's what we're doing. We're investigating it. Do you have anything else to comment on that? Sorry, Brian.
That's okay.
Go ahead. I just want to thank Bill for working on this.
And even you read the minutes, which are now harder to find online because of Daniel's Law, which I support, I think Clinton Township really needs to get the minutes back online. Why are they not back online? Why aren't they redacted? I don't ever remember seeing police officers or other officials' address or phone number in our minutes. They're probably in there somewhere. But keeping the public away from our minutes?
Roads, streets and addresses had been, for sure.
Okay, well, then let's get with it and clean them up, put them back online.
I would say, though, that minutes can be requested.
But to Mr. Cortadillas' point, I know that this year the meeting should be able to just go straight online because
yes.
But we go back.
Carla and then now Lindsay are very careful in terms of how they're preparing their minutes. But retroactive, I can't speak to that.
It's very difficult to do research when you have to Oprah every set of minutes that you want. I could Oprah a year's worth of minutes and make you do them. Please don't make me do that.
No, it's something we can take into consideration, but it is an effort, and we do have other time commitments and staffing issues.
The consequence of Daniel's Law.
Yep.
Transparency in government.
One of them. It's
transparency in government. For the public has to come first. So I read something interesting in the July 12th minutes, which were online. And it was a comment actually from Councilwoman Switlick. It's very short. Councilwoman Switlick asked the council president if he knew, and this was a meeting where the mayor was not present, the council president during the meeting. Councilwoman Switlick asked the council president if he knew how the process to find an administrator for the township was going. Council President Strauss advised that the question should be answered by the mayor since the mayor's liaison to personnel matters. I would like to know what's going on here because I dug up minutes and what I found is that in the past year, our minimum maximum salary for the township administrator is $86,200 to $175,000 a year. Mm-hmm. In the last year, we spent $165,000 $165,551.64 on contract administrator services. This is not a commentary on your administrator. I don't know you. I have no opinion about you. So please don't take this personally. $165,000 for a contract administrator
and
who works part-time.
CPA, yep.
If you annualize that pay, we're talking close to $300,000.
But we're not paying an annualized.
You don't have an administrator 2 days a week. But I have a problem with that.
We have a highly effective administrator who's exceptional.
I don't care.
And
you can't work part-time in Run Township. Again, with all due respect.
With all due respect, we're getting much greater production now than I have seen in quite a while.
That's not what I hear.
But that's great. You have a different opinion than I do.
When the council approved the first contract, you authorized with the mayor or someone to a contract mm-hmm. with the canning group. I opened the contracts. You've done that four of them. There's no contract. Where's the contract? It specifies in the resolution that a contract was authorized to be put together. There's no contract. You put a $50,000 worth of, not to exceed $50,000 per period. In the first period, you spent $78,000, over $78,000. Over $78,000, you authorized $50,000. In total, you spent $165,000. I'm also confused because you appointed, at the beginning of the year, a QPA,
mm-hmm.
qualified. What was QPA?
Qualified Purchasing Agent.
Mr. Sean Cannon. I think how many QPA is great. We have one. But no fee or salary is set for that position. When did the QPA start working? Beginning of January?
I would have to look.
His services are rolled in under the
correct.
Under the agreement with the township. Correct. It was broken out to specify him in that role because you had not designated that.
All the resolution does is appoint Mr. Sean Canning as QPA.
Mm-hmm.
He points out that he's qualified. There's no reference to the Canning Group being who's billing you, who you're paying.
But Sean Canning is the principal of the Canning Group.
There's no reference to the Canning Group. He is being appointed as an individual, Brian. Go read your own resolution, okay? How much are you paying?
It's part of the fee.
You're paying him $135 an hour?
No.
Then how much are you paying?
Again, it's part of the fee.
How much are you paying him? You don't define that in the resolution. As a taxpayer, how do I know what you're paying him? Part of the fee. Mr. Close was here before Mr. Canning came. So you're basically paying him $135 an hour.
That's not true.
Well, if it's not true, what are you paying him? You don't define it in your resolution. I don't see how you can do that. When I opened the documents, what was explained to me was that the invoices are included with Mr. Close's invoices.
Okay.
So this was all lumped in together. But it doesn't say that in the resolution.
I understand you made your point.
Can you tell me why you don't have a full-time administrator? You don't have time to hire somebody or what?
I've already explained that. Mr. Close's output is far greater than the output I've seen in prior administrators, except maybe Ms. Mekovitz.
Working 3 days a week?
Yep, absolutely. And I think you could ask quite a number of people and they would tell you the same thing. And in fact, I would argue that if one were to hire an administrator right now, salary for that administrator full-time would be $145,000, $150,000 plus benefits, you'd be well over $200,000.
You're paying an equivalent $276,000 a year.
We're not paying an equivalent. We're paying an actual amount, and it is not an equivalent. One could argue that I'm getting that much output for half the price, and I would.
You should talk to some of your employees. You're losing employees left and right. Why? You congratulate them when they leave.
You would have to ask them.
But you don't. I have. You don't disclose why they're leaving, Brian. It's all out there.
Good. And for the record, I will not discuss personnel matters with respect to individual employees of the township and why they're leaving.
Well, I want to know what you're paying Mr. Canning to be a QPA. You're paying $135 an hour? Are you paying $135 an hour?
Mr. Corcutillis, you vacated the chair. Thank
How
you.
How much are you paying him?
Is there anyone else in the public who would like to make comment?
You don't answer me. This is public finance, Brian.
Mr. You've made your point. Is there anyone else who'd like to make a comment?
You don't answer the question.
Come on. It's all right. It's a hard act to follow, but you'll be fine.
I was going to say, I think this would be a little easier. It is, so it's not, it is sort of related to the ordinance. I don't know.
This is anything you want. Yep.
So,
and there are no bad questions.
With the affordable housing, there was a law passed in 2021 that a lot of people are not aware of, okay? It's called the Fair Chance of Housing Act. Basically what this law does is it prohibits renters from factoring in criminal history and excluding people based on that. So you've heard my story. You know, I moved here not too long ago. I found out very late in the purchase process about the situation, and the first thing I did was literally I got the email at 4 o'clock in the morning, told my wife we're not buying the house. She's like, all right, calm down, call some people in the town. So I called some people in the town. I said, there's some massive affordable housing unit going up right next to me, which I don't think anyone coming to Huntington County would expect to have hundreds of neighbors within, on your doorstep. So I called the town and I said, here's my concern. You probably can tell I grew up in New York. they put affordable housing in, people get shot. And they said, you know, I get it. I get your concern. But this is different. We're in New Jersey. We're in Hunterdon County. We do criminal background checks. They have to have earned income. It's not welfare, Section 8. And
you called the town, or did you call the...
I didn't write down who it was.
Okay.
I was calling a million people that day.
Okay.
So, and I'm not pointing fingers at that individual. But they knew exactly what my concern was, because they addressed the two major concerns. They're going to have criminals, and in today's political environment, I don't want to say what the other concern is, but it's just, you know, the Section 8. Mm-hmm. You know, generally, I don't know, everyone say, oh, it has no correlation, this, that, and the other thing. You know, get out in the real world, and you'll see that it does. But then I found out this. So I think, I don't want to necessarily align myself with other individuals.
Yeah, no, understood.
But I think at a certain point, we need to put our foot down. I mean, we're inviting people into our backyards that wouldn't otherwise be able to have that population density, and then we can't even prevent them from, you know, coming in here with criminal histories. And some of these crimes, the only out of the gate, the only way they can decline you is if you've been convicted of manufacturing methamphetamine in a public housing project, or if you're on the lifetime sex offender list.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty low bar, in my opinion. And, you know, it's one thing. You fall on hard times, maybe you don't have the best of income. You don't shoot somebody on hard times. That's bullshit. You did it yourself, and you should be held accountable. There's nothing fair about that, as far as I'm concerned. And I have a 7 and an 8-year-old.
Yep.
And I'm out of hundreds of people, and now they can't even be, you know, excluded because of this.
I would say a couple things. To the point of us putting our foot down, these are court mandates, Supreme Court mandates. Like I said, we took this to the state Supreme Court. Our affordable housing attorney argued on our behalf, and other attorneys through the League of Municipalities argued on behalf of all the towns for a fairer and less onerous process. But it's really not possible for us to defy an order of the court. So we were really left with trying to mitigate the damage, as I said before. And just to put in perspective, I know it seems like a lot of units. The townships, we're round three right now, right?
Yeah.
It feels like it should be round four, but I think it's round three.
Ten.
I know. Our obligation for round three is somewhere in the range of new units of 332, 31, 37. So it's in the 330s.
And what does that bring the total up?
That's the total number of affordable housing units we would have to build,
okay,
or have allow to be constructed.
Mm-hmm.
And those units can be constructed either the way we're doing it, or in inclusionary fashion, in which a developer would build five times.
I mean, that's all just a scam. I mean, that's another conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
That's total horseshit.
I don't disagree with
low income people.
I don't disagree with you.
I get it. I'd rather have this.
It's picking your voice.
Yeah.
But I do want to put it in perspective. Reddington, which is one town over, their number for affordable units for round three was a little over 1,000. When you think about it, that's a lot of new people. They're not in Highlands.
That is a big part of it.
So we've managed to, by having a fairly good relationship with Fair Share, by developing some of these projects and working as well as we can to construct 100% projects, really reduce the total impact on the township. I would also add that I get your concern. I monitor, and the chief does as well. That's where I get my information. What are the trends? Where are they coming from? We've got the one open on Beaver Ave now for a few years.
Is that public information? Because I've actually thought about requesting that information. And I don't think those trends are accurate, because this new law just went into place. So the turnover in those properties is probably so limited in that span.
You know,
I think in 5 years, we're going to say, wow, we...
Right. I'm looking at, you know, my eyes go to in the monthly report that we get, how many domestic incidents do we have, how many assaults, how many the major crimes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking at. In town, in totality, and I haven't seen an uptick, really, in the statistics for the township as a whole, which would tell me that right now it's not had an impact. I know there were some township residents who lived elsewhere in town and moved into there as well. The residents who lived up Austin Hill had a lot of these concerns when this was all agreed 2 years ago. And I've informally heard some of them said, oh, you know, it's not as bad as we thought.
That was prior to 2021 COVID. When this peach of a law was passed.
Yeah, that's fair too.
That's when you could exclude people, at least based on the conversations. You did do criminal background checks. Yeah. So I would imagine that those numbers are going to get worse over time.
So, what we're trying to do, I think it's fair to say, is identify parcels that are likely to be developed and mitigate the impact that would be otherwise borne on them. Because when you get a developer's remedy, they're going to come in, they're going to build
the whole bunch.
Even more than what we're putting on there. And you'll get just as many affordable units, but you'll get also a lot more other stuff.
And I don't know what the chances are, because it seems like New Jersey is a little unique, and from everything I can see.
Our process is awful.
But and you know this far better than I do, but what are the chances of bringing this up to the federal level?
Now, the real remedy for this, in my opinion, and I think in most everyone else's opinion, lies with the legislature and the governor.
Come on,
that's the problem.
Go to the polls.
The Constitution
of
the state of New Jersey was declared by the court of constitutional
constitution,
so it amended the New Jersey Constitution.
Yeah, quite honestly,
it's what New Jersey wants.
I think Governor Christie did away with the regulatory body that managed all this COA, in part so that all the griping and the political hits that the governor's office might take, he could say, it's not us, it's the court. But then the process went away, and it was literally a free-for-all. It was every town for themselves.
Yeah, it's just a shame. I mean, I can't imagine in 10 years we're not going to look back on this and say, wow, this really is a bad situation we got ourselves in, and there's no way to get out of it. So, this isn't directed at you.
No, I understand.
This at hand, and I apologize for making my comment of building them up the other side of 31. But this is a real concern, and that's why I'm really focused. At least now there is some buffer in those woods and stuff like that, where people are not going to want to take a stroll into my backyard.
Right, exactly.
But it sounds like there's if they start cutting trails through there, they're literally going to do a trail right to my backyard.
So I would.
And guess what? Then my kids can't play in my backyard now.
I
can't even put a fence because my damn river is there. So
is one of the reasons most of us ran for office.
Yeah.
So you should have comfort in that.
I would say, though, that my experience with Ingerman, who's going to manage this one, also manages the one on Beaver Ave, and there's a wooded parcel behind there.
Mm-hmm.
I've had certain other issues, and those they address fairly promptly. So it will be managed by an entity that does this all over the state and is a little bit more responsive.
Yeah, because they do have, again, I don't want to waste all your time here, but this is obviously keeping me up at night, literally.
Mm-hmm.
But the renter will develop, I guess Ingerman would then manage the property. After
correct,
the
yeah.
They
have discretion about some of the criminal past. So in certain cases, they can't exclude them, but in certain cases, they can. So they can be more lenient than the law affords. So in other words, if you're a convicted murderer, they could say, well, you know, he seems like a nice guy. Mm-hmm. I made a mistake, accidentally stabbed someone or whatever. And they could say, you know what, we're going to rent it to him. I would hope that we would put pressure on them to be as restrictive as possible, because these idiots in the state even put it in their own piece to support this bill, saying that 30% of people let in prison within 3 years are back in prison. And they use it to support this. And how dumb could you be? You just told us that a third of these people that you're going to rent to are going to be back in jail within 3 years. It would seem like you'd want to hide that, but you know, it's just disturbing. I don't know. It's just a microcosm of bigger issues.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, whatever we can do to at least keep that buffer, I would really appreciate it. I know at a past meeting, it was stated that they can't do anything. At this meeting, it was stated that they can't do it. I would love to get in writing it exactly.
Like I said, that I think you go look at that. Go,
I will.
Go look at that ordinance, that code, I think.
I encourage you to come to the planning board when their application is heard and lobby them to agree to a condition
that's
part of their site plan.
Both Bill and Brian are on the.
Yep. Yeah. I will probably have to recuse from that given my.
All right, well.
Yeah, but.
But no, that's the appropriate venue for trying to get conditions. So any site plan that comes, there'll be conditions attached to development. If they're asking for any, if they can develop by rights, there's a
yeah.
But they need to come and they'll want some things.
Yep.
The township can impose conditions on development in return. It's got to be an agreement between the parties, the board has to want to do it, but that's the place to come and talk about things like that.
Yeah, and I did, I don't know, there's so many boards and council meetings and everything, and I've been to a million, I don't know, Board of Adjustment, everything else. I don't remember, one of them I did come, and I did say something to the effect, well, it's not, it's implied, but it's not written. And we put it specifically in there, because now I could specifically go to a document and say, you didn't, you said you weren't going to do it, now you did.
And the zoning officer has that as well.
I don't want to name names, it wasn't anyone here, but they kind of laughed at me, like, oh, we're going to put that into the document, we'll tell them everything they can't do. And I'm like, why not? If you're telling me they're not going to do it, anyone that doesn't want to put something in writing that they're willing to say is not going to hold to, you know, so yeah. I don't see that's a big deal. If we say, all right, you're not going to do it, put it
in. There's some planning board resolutions that are really, really very specific and very lengthy with very detailed conditions.
I don't think that would be a difficult condition.
No, it doesn't cost them anything.
Just me.
So anyway, I know it's a late night.
So that would be the point to come when the public hearing occurs, which I would think would be in the coming months. I don't know that it's been an application, but within the coming months, that is the right time to talk about these concerns. And you'll get some knowledge. Obviously, they can't do anything to break the public policy. They're not going to say,
sure, sure.
Board this law.
No, I got you.
But if it's the use of the site, I mean, I think they're going to say, I think my understanding is they're going to have a big retaining wall in the back from a safety perspective. They're going to want people back there and on. So, but that's for the applicant to respond to.
And then just from a timing perspective, again, because I don't want to miss this meeting, there are two people in here that it directly impacts because we're bordering the property.
Mm-hmm.
So how much lead time can we have? Because it would be a real shame if I'm that way in business.
There are statutory requirements for the notices for the planning board, and those should come in the mail. And I don't know what the notice is. Is it 10 days? Is it more?
It has to be sent out a minimum of 10 days, but that doesn't mean it has to be received. It just has to be mailed.
Is it just snail mail?
No, certified.
That's kind of crazy, though. I mean, I have a job that I travel for. I can't cancel on clients in 10 days.
My anticipation is the next planning board meeting will be canceled. If I had to guess, this will be before the planning board in October. One of those two meetings.
Okay.
Because, again, to the point I made at the beginning, this is part of the speed with which we're trying to move this ordinance is so that they can take advantage of this HMFA money while it's available, and there's a deadline at the end of the year, and they've got to get everything lined up. And I apologize again for some of the hiccups. Yeah. The newspaper didn't run it correctly. We weren't able to run. It was a mess. No fault to anybody's in particular. But I would look to those two October meetings.
Yeah, the 16th is probably most likely.
I would think. So, yeah. I would think the 16th, but I'll get an idea, I'm sure, and I'll let you know.
You know what the due dates are, the 16th?
And
I can look it up right now.
I think in October I've got my calendar, the 1st and 16th.
And this is planning board?
Yeah. I have a couple of planning boards, so it'd be monitor that given one. It's the 1st and 3rd Mondays.
Right out of the gate, I know I can't do the October 2nd.
I would think that's probably too soon.
I would too, just from a cleanness.
Well, yeah, they got to get it in and all.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we got to get our 20 some odd days for it to stick.
Yeah. I would think the second meeting.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate it, son.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else? Officer in the back, staying awake. No, there's no executive session. All right, in that case, Mr. Glazer, would you make a long-awaited motion?
I would make a motion to adjourn.
Roll call, please. This may be quicker than the meeting on the 27th. This may be longer than the meeting on the 27th.
Yes.
Councilman Kitchenowski.
Yes.
Councilman Sutliff.
Yes.
Council President Strauss.
Yes.
Mayor Millay.
Yes. Thank you much.